Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is April 21st, 2015. I currently have 6:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Crawley and the pledge by Mr. Bunker. Mr. Crawley?
Dear Father in Heaven, we're thankful that we could gather as a City Council and as residents and city employees and discuss the affairs of the city, and we're thankful for this wonderful place we have been blessed with to live and that was prepared for us, and we're thankful for the opportunities we have to serve, and help us that we can have thy spirit to be with us and that we'll be able to discern the right thing to do to help the city out, to make the right decisions, to bless the city going forward. And we're thankful for all that we have, and we're thankful for our freedoms especially, and we say this in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Will the audience please rise, repeat the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. First thing we need to do is approve the meeting's agenda or amend it, depending on what you want to do. So I'll take that motion now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay. I have a motion on the agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Moving on to public comments. Did not see that anyone had signed up as I was walking by the list. Is there anyone here that wants to speak? If not, close public comments and move on to our consent agenda. In the consent agenda, there's the appointment of April Hancock to the Cultural Arts Citizen Advisory Committee. So someone like to make a motion on that appointment, and then we'll come back to the minutes in a moment.
It says that we approve both of these in a single motion.
Yep.
What's that?
It says that we approve both of these in a single motion. That's so correct. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
As is.
Yep.
Okay. There's a motion to accept the consent agenda as is. So the appointment of April Hancock to the Cultural Arts Advisory Committee, and also the minutes from the March 17th to 2015 City Council meeting. That is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you. Let's move on to city reports. Mr. Bunker, why don't you start?
Great. So we've had a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting this last week, and we are considering defeasing another series of bonds, which will further reduce the debt that the district has incurred. By doing that, we will be able to meet our bond covenants a little bit easier, and allow us potentially to, the next time we need to bond at the district, do so under a new agreement. Up till now, the district's been required to use the original master agreement, which sets the requirements for the bond covenants. And it is restrictive because it has us meet a 1-to-1 ratio for debt service coverage with impact fees, and a 1-to-0 without impact fees. And that makes a difference when we go to prove our coverage for our bonds. And so by getting rid of all the old series bonds, it'll help us to renegotiate those in the future, which is a good thing for the district. So a couple of other things. Our co-ed teen soccer program kicked off last night. And so they are very excited about that, and participation is up and way better than what we had anticipated. Our taught soccer and our other soccer program starts next Tuesday. T-ball is currently open for children ages 3 and 4, and registration ends in early May. At the Junior Jazz Banquet last night, Cedar Hills was recognized again as having the largest program for all cities with less than 15,000 residents. And we received a plaque and some recognition, and Mr. Gordon and took his lovely bride, who just had their 25th anniversary the other day, and they went up to receive that, and it was a good recognition for that program. Our golf resident appreciation happened. We had seven people who came to take advantage of that. So we just finished the first ever play that the city has been a part of, thanks to Nicole Allen for getting that off the ground and going. It was a huge success. Again, more participation in that event than we anticipated as well. Our first IFA community class was held last week. We only had six residents attend that, but we are going to have another one tomorrow night, or next month. And Diane Farr, she is the one putting that on. So we'd love to see more residents come out to those classes. So those are the things that we have from recreation. That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Cipolla.
We had a meeting of the Lone Peak Public Safety Board, and a number of interesting issues were there. One is we had a discussion on sustainability of the budget. So typically, this happens with our budget as well, we're looking to do a raise for staff, or in this case for police or fire. And if that's a 3% raise or a 2% raise or even a 1% raise every year, that starts to add up over time. And so we had a discussion of how we can continue to provide those kinds of increases while holding the line on the budget. That's always a difficult thing for public entities. There also was a budget approved for the fire department, which I believe does not have an increase this year, if I remember that correctly. And then there was a discussion for Lone Peak Police that they are going to look to start wearing body cameras. That's pending some work on getting a policy for when they're going to wear them, when they get activated. So we'll look forward to hearing what they have to say on that in our next meeting.
Okay. Mrs. Reese.
Okay, so Planning Commission met last week, and the Lakeview Trail subdivision final plans were approved and will be coming to the council soon. The Blue Line development, which is the Rosegate facility, was tabled as the Planning Commission had several concerns with the new renderings that were provided. However, the Planning Commission did agree to hold a special meeting to review updated plans, and I'll keep you informed as to when that is scheduled. Family Festival plans are going well. We're still on for that first week of June, and details are going into the newsletter, and you can find those on the city website as well. And then we met with the Cultural Arts Committee, and they are discussing plans for the summer and throughout the rest of the year. One thing that they would like, as we're talking about budget, is for the city to consider purchasing a stage for plays and other events, as well as for rentals. So right now, we had the one play, we have another play coming up, and when those things are happening, they have to rent a stage. And they received three bids for renting a stage, and they range from about $1,200 to $2,700 per rental. They're waiting on some additional bids for purchasing a stage, but the first bid they received was for $4,700. So they estimate it would be, you know, three to four plays before we covered our cost. However, Natalie in events has also indicated they've had some events where stages were brought in from outside entities, and she felt that, and she's had another one very recently, someone who wants to do a fashion show here in the fall who was asked about a stage, and so she felt that we could also recoup some of that money by renting it out to people who are interested in the event center. So that is one thing maybe we can get on the agenda next time to talk about whether we are interested in making that purchase. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. At the last MAG meeting, we discussed the state legislature's passage of the gas tax and the local option. And so on the gas tax, money will start being collected in January of 2016. So that'll be about a half a year of our fiscal year that money would be collected. So there's not much of an impact in that year. The following year, where there's a full 12 months, it's maybe close to $150,000 of more BNC road funds. So I've talked to Mr. Bunker about that just briefly and let him know that that's a possibility. Local option, that is in the form of an election. And so the county's holding an election this fall. I think that they want to get it on the ballot. And so if that happens, then we've got to figure out how that affects our ability to have a vote by mail. So we're discussing that and trying to figure out what our options are. The county may put off the local option ballot until 2016, but they actually, I think, wanted to get it on the ballot this year. So I'll keep you in the loop on that. Mr. Gustis.
North Point met, and we approved next year's fiscal budget. It's a little bit more than what they'd had last year, but still well within what it's been over the last few years. And we had the annual audit, which we reviewed, went over in great detail. They did not have any findings, and the annual audit was approved also. So it looked very good for North Point.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
I report on the Utah County Dispatch. The biggest news there is that they're building new building being built in Spanish Fork is progressing nicely. We approved a preliminary plan. And I'm new in this. I know Daniel's seen the early stages of it, but they've tweaked it and tweaked it. Now it looks really good, and they did prepare an RFQ, so they're going to limit five bidders, and then that was approved, and so that goes out, and we'll see what happens between now and the next meeting. As far as the Park and Trail Committee, they met this last week, and the biggest thing that's coming up is the Beautification Day. I think it's May 6th, May, what is it?
Second.
May 2nd, everybody's invited, the community is invited. There will be a lunch served for those that participate. There will be several options for service. So encourage your neighbors, friends, come.
Okay, anything else?
That's it.
Okay, Mr. Crawley.
I don't have much, but I do have this. I just got an email from Jeremy Reitzel, and he's the attorney that came out last fall and wanted to speak to us a little bit. He wasn't allowed to speak, but he didn't realize that we were going up for, you know, putting out an RFQ for attorney services. So he emailed me and said, he just barely emailed me. He said, "It's been a few months since we last spoke. If you recall, I helped you research some legal issues last summer. In any event, I understand Cedar Hills City Council is considering new legal counsel tonight. I'm writing to request an opportunity to present my firm for consideration."
Can you speak a little bit louder, please?
Yeah. He says, "I'm writing to request an opportunity to present my firm for consideration. I would be happy to prepare a proposal. I believe we can be competitive in price, and I doubt that any other firm with our broad experience and expertise, we are a full-service firm, is applying for the opportunity." I explained to him it's kind of late, but I would at least ask if we'd consider one more. So something to consider tonight. If we are having trouble deciding, then maybe we'd consider giving it a little more time and let one more applicant in.
I appreciate that. I think it probably is too late, but I appreciate you letting him know. So we are about right on schedule. Are you Mr. Alstrom? Thank you. So the way that things will go tonight, similar to the RFQ processes last week, we will bring each of the law firms through. They have 15 minutes. And so once they are all through, that will have given you opportunity to look at the spreadsheet that Mr. Bunker prepared for you guys, their profile, their application, their presentation, and perhaps a question or two. And then at that point, I'll take a motion from someone if they're ready on the firm that they're interested in. So let's start. Mr. Alstrom.
Point of order. I signed up for this item.
Are you wanting to make public comments? Is that what you're saying?
In regards to this issue.
Yeah.
If you deny it, then you can deny.
And so we already did have public comments, and so no one had signed up. So I closed public comments already.
Okay.
would you reconsider in light of your start and literally the minutes of your start? In fact, council members related to your life.
If you want to take 3 minutes right now, I'll give you 3 minutes right now.
Okay, thank you very much. Have you shown me your clock so I can be on time with you, please?
Do you have a clock?
I got my watch.
Then give me just a moment before you start it.
I'll raise my hand when you have a minute.
I'll run you a clock too. Get shortchanged.
My name is Ken Cromar, Cedar Hills, 9870 North Meadow Drive, former elected city councilman in 1994 to January of 2000. I have great interest in this subject with regards to the legal services that are being contemplated. I sent an email to all of you as quickly as I could earlier today. Well, actually, it was just very late this afternoon. Who received that, just out of curiosity? Okay, I'll pass you a copy here in just a moment. Really, my hope is to congratulate you for this effort to seek legal services. Frankly, I'm a member of Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government and can only speak for myself here tonight in light of the short notice with regards to some of the firms that were being considered. The one that jumped out at me in particular was Sturba & Associates, who has actually served this community back in 2012 to, as opposed to our city attorney representing the mayor, Eric Richardson, and Conrad Hildebrand in a complaint that was filed by our organization at the 4th District Court requesting an investigation regarding a number of questionable activities on the part of then city manager and then city mayor. Mr. Sturba actually acted in a conflict of interest. That was acknowledged by County Attorney Jeffrey Buman last year when I spoke with him personally about this issue. I imagine he would confirm that communication, that he actually went to Peter Sturba and said, you should not be representing both Cedar Hills and work for us at the county while on this issue. And he did not declare his conflict of interest. We filed a complaint at the Utah Bar Association, to which at last check, many weeks after the process, he had never responded to clarify his position. He billed the city $40,000 for those services and did so in a conflict of interest. Does that mean 1 minute?
That means 1 minute.
Thank you. And so what I wanted you to be aware of is that issue. It actually highlights a number of issues that concern myself and a number of residents. The relationship between the Cedar Hills government and the citizens has been tenuous at best, often due to many questionable activities, and the city attorney seems to have been working mostly, if not only, specifically for the mayor and or city manager at times in times past, and not necessarily for the city council members who actually would approve funding, let alone the citizens of this community. It is our hope, that my hope specifically, that you will carefully consider attorneys and minimize the need for attorney help and hence minimize the cost, but make sure that the attorney help is inclined to represent the citizens first who actually pay the price.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let us move on. Mr. Alstrom, you are first up. You'd like to make a brief introduction and then your presentation. We'll be happy to take that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Appreciate the opportunity to address you. My name is Doug Alstrom. I live in Lehigh. Heretofore in my career, I've been the Draper City Attorney for the last 8 years, Twilla County Attorney for 8 years, or for 12 years prior to that, and the Twilla City Attorney for 8 years prior to that. And the year before that, I was Deputy Twilla County Attorney, where I did all the criminal prosecution there. And so that's been my career. It's always been in municipal government. The city manager in Draper decided he wanted to bring in his own attorney, so I resigned. And that's why I'm looking for work. My goal is to continue service with cities. That's what I know. It's what I do. I've worked with many city councils, both in Draper and in Tooele. I've worked with county commission as it changed over the years. And so I've worked with a lot of elected officials. I've also worked with state and local officials, various boards, committees, and so forth. I'm a one-man shop. I haven't set up an office. I don't have an office billing address. I work out of my home. But I do know how to give good, competent, excellent legal advice, and that would be my hope that I give to you if I'm the type of person that you're looking for. I've got the state code. I assume you've got a copy of the city code, and I would advise you accordingly. And my goal, I figure if I can keep a city off the front page of the newspaper, I've succeeded. Now, I recognize that my opinion is not the end-all, be-all. You all have opinions, as I have my own. And so I would expect that there would be times when we would disagree. And city councils haven't always followed my opinion, and that's just fine. I would stress that I would not work for any one of you. I don't know any one of you. I don't know anyone here in this city. My brother-in-law here lived here years ago, but he's since moved. So I don't know your politics. I just felt a sense of that from your last commenter. I can sense that there's been some tension here in the city. And my goal would be then to guide you through those trouble spots and be available whenever you need me. I don't have any other clients right now. I recognize that this is a part-time position. I do have feelers out. I've applied to a part-time position in Provo. I've applied to other full-time positions, but nothing has come as of yet. But it's still early in the game. So what questions could I answer for you?
Before we get started, let me take a couple of minutes. And I want to say something, and then I do have a couple of questions. So in the sense of fair disclosure, I have either hired or I've used Smith Hartfixson, Callister Nebaker and McCullough, Curtin McConkie. Mr. Sturba and I have interacted through email and some work, and he has helped the city before. So there's a full council, so I will not be breaking any ties tonight, but I just want to let the council know that I have used those three firms, Smith Hartfixson, Callister Nebaker, McCullough, and Curtin and McConkie. So, first question to you, Mr. Alstrom. Are you familiar with the local government trust?
I am.
Okay. And so do you have any potential conflicts of interest if you were to represent the Cedar of City Hills in suing the local trust?
No.
Thank you. Do you have any experience in dealing with sovereign citizens?
Yes.
How would you recommend that a city deal with that type of a vexatious litigant?
You acknowledge that they're there. Judges recognize who they are and what they are, and we proceed accordingly, just very carefully. I'm a very conservative attorney. I'm going to give you the best advice I can. I've only had one experience, perhaps two, but it's been 20, 25 years ago with a constitutionalist person. And so my experience hasn't been recent. I may not be up on their latest tactics, but I do know that they're out there, and we treat them as courteously as we can.
Okay, thank you very much. Council, it's your time.
Being a one-man show, that can be viewed as a negative thing.
Yes.
You don't have help with clerical things and things like that. How would you combat that argument?
Well, Draper, I was the one and only attorney for 40,000 people population, and I did most of my own typing. My assistant didn't do a lot for me. That being said, I do my own work. Hopefully you've got some secretarial staff, if need be, that I could tap into. But it is what it is. I'm not going to be hiring an employee to help me.
Can you tell me what your experience is with grandma law and if you've ever appeared before the State Records Committee on behalf of a city?
I've dealt with grandma every day of my career almost, it seems like. Grandma is very difficult. No, I have not appeared before the Records Committee. I know that when cities go in front of the Records Committee, they lose almost 95% of the time. It's not worth it. Grandma says records are considered public unless previously designated otherwise. And so I'm going to take, again, the conservative approach with you, try to keep you out of trouble, and disclose pretty much most everything, unless something is a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. That seems to be the catch-all for most of the records that we try not to disclose.
Thank you. Can you explain just briefly your relationship with Draper City? That's your most recent position, correct? Mm-hmm. And for a period of how long?
8 years.
8 years. Could you explain just how that ended and what is your ongoing relationship with them?
I have no relationship with them. It ended because the city manager, who's fairly new, decided to bring in a new attorney for himself. Draper is a very volatile situation. Mm-hmm. All of the senior staff has turned over at least once and sometimes twice since I've been there. I was the last remaining one to be there, and so the time came. Seems to be my pattern is about 8 years, 12 years, that's about all I get.
Okay. How would you deal with a developer who threatens litigation if his development is not approved?
Happens every day. You prove it or else type of a thing. No, you approve those developments that comply with the law. The law is spelled out in state law and your city code. If the developer hasn't dotted all the I's and crossed the T's, it's an incomplete application. You don't do it. But the city law is held strictly construed against the city. So once the developer satisfies your code, you cannot be imposing arbitrary things upon that developer. And so I found that many times the developer is right. Some of the big developers, they know what they're doing. And so you need to approve their developments when it complies with all of your codes, including the building.
So what happens when you get into a gray area?
Well, gray areas are always matters of interpretation. Again, it's strictly construed against a city, so you'd better be fair and reasonable, not arbitrary and capricious. And I'm going to give my opinions based on what I perceive as fair and reasonable. Usually, the developer is coming in and they want to benefit their pockets and they want to benefit the city. And so you need to consider both of those sides. There's nothing wrong for them to make a profit. The development does need to comply with your code, though. The gray areas, you work through and you struggle through and you agonize over. That's the nature of the game.
You mentioned that you're still looking for full-time positions. So if one comes through, then what happens?
Don't know. My ultimate goal, I'd like to get a couple more years in their state retirement system. And so that means I need a job with some benefits. State retirement being one of those. And so I can't answer that right now.
Any other questions?
So just to clarify that a little bit further, if we decided to go with you and sign a contract with you tonight, we would be expecting longevity with our city. So theoretically speaking, though, if you found a full-time position, that would put Cedar Hills in a bad position if you stepped away from that. Is that correct?
It would, and I don't want to leave you in a lurch. That's not my job. That's not what I'm trying to do. I want to see you succeed in what you're doing. If at all possible, I would like to continue to represent you if you gave me that opportunity. I see this as a wonderful community, a great place to grow and to help and assist you. But I have to be honest with you as well. I just don't know what the future will bring, as it's lining up right now, there's a lot of part-time positions out there. I may not get a full-time position. So, if I get you, if I should get a part-time in Provo, I see that as a great opportunity.
One quick question. We requested that every attorney fill out an RFQ, and I was told that it was incomplete, the one that you filled out. I was just curious if that's the case.
I wasn't given that information. I provided a secondary statement to Mr. Goodwin with my billing hours. Okay.
Can someone explain what was incomplete? Because someone told me that, so I just want to make sure that I'm not misinterpreting that. Maybe.
Sorry, the RFQ was a proposal that we sent out for public for professional services like we did previously with the building inspector, with the engineering firm, and with the financial advisors. The RFQ called for certain documentation to be provided based on experience. It was just giving you general information about your law firm. In the case of Mr. Alstrom, he submitted an application for filled out the application for employment with the city, and upon further inquiry, provided additional information as far regarding a retainer and hourly fees that would be associated with him serving the city. So that's the information that we got versus the RFQ.
Okay.
So we did get our information from him that we did need. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
One quick question, if I might.
Okay.
In the information that you provided based on your fee and your retainer, cities are oftentimes fairly strapped with their budgets. Would you be willing to look at your fee or your retainer and be able to adjust that to meet the city budget?
I could. As I looked at it, I thought I've given you a very good, fair price. I don't know that I could go much lower.
Okay. Thank you.
Was there a retainer? You didn't no. specify a retainer.
Sorry, I probably shouldn't say retainer. Just right. his fee that he
just
would charge.
But we do know what fee was submitted there. So yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Alstrom. Mr. Sterbin, I believe you are next. If you wanted to come and give a little presentation of yourself, and then after that, I imagine there's going to be some questions for you.
Sure, that'd be great. Mayor, good evening, and Council, good evening. My name is Peter Sterba, and I'm with the firm of Sterba PC. I think it's fair to say that my interaction with cities and towns basically over the years, and it's been many, is really in three different areas. First of all, I have been a city attorney. I was city attorney for Gunnison for 10 years. I also was a city attorney for a short period of time with the town of Centerfield, which is located in the central part of our state. And I realize in representing Gunnison, they have the prison there. They have a number of sort of unique circumstances that are fairly significant to the town. And I realize, obviously, being a city attorney is almost like being a general practitioner. You're expected to know a lot of things. There are a lot of issues that come up. It's also somewhat of a growing community, as this community is. So therefore, I've dealt with a number of different issues in that capacity. Secondly, I have represented in litigation, I don't know how many cities and towns in the state of Utah, but it's dozens and dozens and dozens, and it's from Cache County to Washington County and every place in between. And as such, it's not just representing the cities and towns in the litigation, but I interact with the council, I interact with the mayor, I interact with the people who are on the ground, enforcement people and what have you, who work for the city. So I have a fairly good understanding from all those cases on how city government operates. And then the third way that I've interacted is, and this is routine, I have been asked many times to provide sort of an opinion or a counsel or some kind of consulting role for an issue that has come up with the city that they need some outside help with. For example, there was a First Amendment issue. This just came up a couple months ago. There was a First Amendment issue that a city had that they were concerned about. They contacted our firm because we've done a lot of First Amendment questions and issues with cities and towns, so they wanted our expertise in that particular area. Another circumstance I can think of is a termination. I was brought in to essentially terminate a police chief. And there were some issues there that were sort of important. They wanted to be done correctly, so there would be no litigation, no suits, and what have you. So I was asked to participate in that. There was another situation involved a judge, similar situation, where the judge was sort of had worn out his welcome, and essentially they brought me in to facilitate the exit so it would be done in a nice way, a reasonable way, a non-litigious way. Everybody would be happy. And so those are the kinds of things I've done over many, many years. So that's essentially my experience. And of course, I've had experience with you folks going back a couple of years, and I remember there were a number of things that we dealt with, one of which was we represented the city in a Board of Adjustment hearing, and there were some other issues that were involved as well. So in any event, that's who I am, and I think I submitted my resume, and I think it's fairly well explains and delineates my experience. So any questions you have, I'm happy to answer.
I'll start. So, Mr. Sterba, before you got here, one of our residents, Ken Cromer, made some allegations about you. I want to give you the opportunity to give your side of the story as well.
Sure.
So he alleged that, and by the way, just so the council knows, is that when Mr. Sterba did business with Cedar Hills, he was hired by Conrad Hildebrand and Eric Richardson. City paid the bills, but they hired you. And so Mr. Cromer alleged that you operated under an undisclosed conflict of interest representing those two gentlemen at the same time representing the county, and that Jeff Buman had told Mr. Cromer that there was a conflict of interest, and Mr. Buman had approached you and said that there is a conflict of interest. Can you just give me your side of that story, please?
Well, sure. As a lawyer representing a number of different clients, counties, cities, individuals, they know a lot of people. I have done work for Utah County for probably 25 years. When that issue surfaced, there was basically a request by the county attorney to do an investigation. I believe it was on the mayor at the time. If memory serves me. There was no conflict of interest as far as I was concerned, because there was nothing adverse to me representing the mayor in this particular municipality and the county. Mr. Buman had to make his own decision with respect to what he was going to do. All I did, I had one conversation with Mr. Buman, I believe, said, "Hey, Jeff, I'm here. If you need anything, please call me." And I wrote him one letter. That was it, basically delineating the same thing, scope of the representation. If you need help, fine. Quite frankly, I thought that was a benefit to this community, because he knows me, he knows I'm credible, he knows he can rely upon me, and I thought it was actually a good thing, not a bad thing. But it's not a conflict of interest, because there was nothing adverse between the county and Mr. Buman, and at that time, my client, which essentially was the mayor, but also it had implications for the city as well. So obviously, if we could get that resolved with respect to the mayor, it would be beneficial to the city. That's the way I looked at it. So I didn't see any conflict whatsoever. There is no conflict, I'll tell you right now, and that was the scope of it.
Thank you. A couple more questions, then I'm going to turn it over to the council. Speaking of conflicts of interest, you know who the local government trust is?
Yes.
And if the city were to ask you to sue them for non-coverage, do you have a conflict of interest, and could you represent us there?
I don't represent the Utah Local Government Trust. We do have a couple of cases whereby, through the Local Government Trust, those cities have insurance, liability insurance, and we do represent those. A large portion of our business has nothing to do with the trust. So quite frankly, I would have to look at it, but there's no big, how can I put it, relationship right now with our law firm and the Utah Local Government Trust. In fact, for reasons that are probably not pertinent here, it's probably not really a problem to do that if there's legitimate issue, legitimate legal problem, and what have you, vis-a-vis the trust.
Thank you. And my last question is, are you familiar with so-called sovereign citizens? And if so, how would you recommend cities deal with vexatious litigants like that?
It's very difficult. It's very much like pro se litigants at times, or people who just do not accept the jurisdiction of courts, cities, or what have you. It's very difficult. Judges are somewhat reticent to go ahead and be unduly punitive, because once again, our society is based upon the premise, if you think you have a beef, you go to court. You don't have a fist fight, you don't have a brawl. So judges are somewhat remiss to foreclose people going to court. All I can tell you is, I had them when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office. We had tax protesters, which are sort of in the same ilk. And sometimes you can work with them, and sometimes you just can't. And you have to go through the process. It's painful, it's difficult, it's wasteful, it's expensive sometimes, but that's your alternative. But that said, a city attorney should be a problem solver. A city attorney should try to resolve things in anticipation of a problem down the road and avoid that problem. So what I'm trying to emphasize here is there may be times when you can communicate, talk, resolve, what have you, to avoid too much conflict. Okay. I'm not saying that always is the case, but I think generally that would be the approach I think I would counsel the city to take initially.
Thank you. Council, time's yours.
Can I follow up on that question? So at times in our city, we've wanted to rely on an attorney to speak with a resident who is constantly litigious with us. And that resident would complain that, I don't want to have to always talk to an attorney. I'd rather just talk to city officials directly, but we felt that was the best protection for us. Is that something you would recommend, that a council would go through the attorney to deal with an individual of that nature?
Well, like all things, it's contextual. But having said that, there's a certain amount of judgment in every particular situation that needs to be engaged. And so as the city attorney, I would have to understand the persons, the problem, the relationships, the issues, and what have you, and maybe that would be totally appropriate, and maybe it wouldn't. But you're trying to avoid problems, and the better relationship you can have, the more likely you're going to avoid legal problems. So I'm sorry, that's about as good as I can do.
Can you tell me what your experience is with Grandma, and if you've ever appeared before the State Records Committee on behalf of the city?
I have not appeared before the State Records Committee, but Grandma, I can tell you our law firm probably in the last month has responded to probably no less than 30 Grandma requests. So Grandma is something I'm quite familiar with.
And when you say respond to Grandma requests, what does that involve? What does your law firm do?
Well, it depends the source. Some of it's from the media. Some of it's from, actually, we had a situation which involved a local official and a local official in a county north of Salt Lake, and they were spinning out basically grandma requests. It really all depends on where it comes from. But basically, the response is you look at the statute, you look at the code, you look at what is requested, and we write letters saying, this is what we'll do pursuant to such and such and such. This is what you're not entitled to pursuant to such and such and such. And this is basically what we're going to do. And it all depends. Sometimes, for example, some of the requests you can't even understand. And if it's ambiguous, we don't answer it because you have to be clear. Grandma requires that. If it's unduly burdensome, if it's unduly large in terms of volume, you can make some exceptions there. There are all kinds of exceptions on how you respond. But the important thing is you need to respond. It's there presumably for the benefit of the public, and cities and towns and counties and governmental entities have some obligation to play that straight and to provide records if otherwise they're legally required to do so, which is what we try to do.
And do you do the redaction yourself in your firm, or do you rely on city recorders to do that?
Do we what?
Do you do the redaction yourself, or do you rely on city?
No, these are grammar requests which either are in the public domain in terms of the kind of situation we're dealing with, or they're sensitive, we take care of it. We work sometimes with the governmental entity in terms of it's a large volume of documents, but what we usually do is say, give us the documents. We need to see exactly what you got, and then we'll look at it and worry about what we're going to give and what we're not going to give, because you have to be right about this, and when it's sensitive, we want to take responsibility.
I have a question. So the way back to that issue with the potential conflict of interest, the way I understood it, you were in a position where you were giving advice to the county on whether to investigate the mayor here in the city.
Oh, no. Okay. No, not at all. Mm-hmm. I represented the county and have for years in totally unrelated matters, typically involving the sheriff's office, civil rights cases, and the like.
So you never gave any opinion at all towards the county as far as their potential investigation was going on here?
To this extent, I did.
Okay.
I basically said, we don't think this is a legitimate thing for you to investigate.
Okay.
Certainly, that was the position I was taking on behalf of my client.
So that's what I was saying. You were on behalf of the client
saying that. On behalf of the mayor, and as I say, by implication, the city. Mm-hmm. The relationship that I had with Mr. Buhlman, as I said before, I thought was beneficial because he knows me, he knows our firm, He knows I'm credible. He knows when we say something, we mean it, and it's important, and we can work with him. But it never really rose to that level. As I say, one phone call, one letter, that was it.
I could see how there could be a conflict of interest, though, if you're representing the people that the county is considering investigating, then you're obviously in a position where you're representing them. They're paying you, where you could be conflicted in telling the county, please, you don't need to investigate them. They're clean. That, and if the county has a relationship with you, you're working for them at the same time. I see that as a potential conflict of interest. But anyway, I just wanted to see if you still feel like that there's no conflict at all there.
It's not a legal conflict. Let me analogize it to something else I've had in my experience. Okay. Counties prosecute criminal cases. We represent counties and have in the past sometimes in civil matters, obviously defending them, what have you. So we know the officials, we know the people in the county attorney's office. Let's say we have a criminal case. There's no adverse, we're not adverse to the county because it's brought on behalf of the state of Utah. But the fact that we have a relationship that is good, positive, and credible with the people who are prosecuting the case, if we're representing that defendant, it seems to me it's beneficial for that defendant. And I've had county attorneys basically tell me, we're glad you're on this case. Why? Because we can work with you, we know you, and you're going to be honest in your dealings, and they appreciate that. And I think the same thing applied here.
But I can see how if there was some wrongdoing, I'd want to hire, you know, let's say I did something wrong. I'd say, oh, I got to hire Peter Sturba. He has a relationship with the county, and he's going to be representing. I could see that as conflict.
And quite frankly, now you've raised something that is a little bit different. Uh-huh. If we got to a certain point, which we never got to, then perhaps there could be, in fact, a conflict of interest. For example, I may not, just as a matter of pure relationships, I may not want to be involved with something that is going to be intensely litigated by the county attorney's office. That certainly could happen. But that it never rose to that level. And I think I made full disclosure to the mayor and everybody that there was always that potential, but initially there was certainly no harm. In fact, I think it was beneficial by my involvement.
So you did disclose to them that you also worked for the county?
I'm fairly confident that that was well known, and I did disclose that. But it's a timing question. There's no sense getting involved in worrying about conflicts when there is no conflict.
Okay, that's the end of my question.
Thank you. Let's move, Mr. Sturba. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll let Trent
right.
No,
you're first. Go ahead.
You mentioned you'd represented a bunch of cities and towns, dozens and dozens of them. So what's your track record?
Well, I guess I still represent a lot of cities and towns and counties, so I guess it's pretty good. I couldn't begin to tell you, but I think generally we've been successful more times than not. But like all lawyers, and especially if you try enough cases, you lose some. That's just the way it is. And I wouldn't be saying that I won them all because that wouldn't be true. You win some, you lose some. But generally, I think we've been successful in most of our endeavors.
Okay. Mr. Augustus.
Two quick questions. Based on the proposal that you presented to us, I believe you outlined your retainer amount and then also what your hourly rate was for anything outside of that. So with a city the size of Cedar Hills, what would you anticipate as far as time that you would dedicate to our city, and what would you imagine would be involved with that?
Well, that's a tough question because I don't really know what kind of legal issues you have. I will say this. As far as the general administrative matters, I think that varies. There may be times when there's very little conflict, there's very little need for changes in ordinances, there's very little need for legal advice, it may be very low. There may be other months, if you will, where there's a lot of issues, and a lot of issues are going to take time. So I think it varies. That's generally been my experience with most clients, and certainly with Gunnison, that was my experience as well. The litigation issues, see, the way I understood that was the city is interested in having the city attorney actually represent the city in court cases. Well, it all depends what the court case is. It all depends how complicated it is. That's almost impossible to talk about without having a case in front of me.
Yeah, and mainly for the retainer amount, what kind of hours would you be able to dedicate to our city in order to handle the general administrative?
I think we were looking somewhere with that number. I want to say 20 to 25 hours, okay. Something like that, I think a month.
Okay.
I think that's sort of how we were trying to figure it. Frankly, it was a low ball figure, I'll tell you that right now. But part of the reason for that is we kind of enjoy this kind of work, and we kind of enjoy representing cities and towns and counties. And so this is not a situation where what we're proposing, we wanted to have, you know, to be excessive, because we also realize budgets are tight, and this is the nature of the work that we do.
Okay.
Go ahead. Mr. Geddes, you have a question?
I was just going to say, as a follow-up to that, I was just reading your proposal, and it did say approximately 15 hours a month, which would basically max out your retainer. In the event there were months there was less, would we carry those hours, or would we just treat it as a flat? Then that's my second question is, I ask that because you represent Gunnison now as their city attorney, is that right?
No, not now. That ended. Mayor Ney did not run for re-election, I think, a year ago, and that's when that ended.
So currently you're not representing any other city?
That's right.
Okay, because what I'm concerned about is that as a city attorney, because I think it's important that we don't have conflicts with a bunch of other cities with council meeting nights on Thursday, and so you represent two cities, but both their city councils meet on Thursday night, so you have to kind of pick and choose which one to go to, and I think that's I'd just like to make sure that you would represent us, you know, in full disclosure there.
I think absolutely. Let me address that retainer issue, because I've had this with other clients and corporate clients, what have you. Here's the way I view it. You try to figure out, okay, what's a fair amount? And then after a period of time, whether it's a year, 6 months, probably a year, you kind of look at the workload. And if one party is being disadvantaged, you change it.
Yeah.
Either you go up or down, depending. And if so, there's not enough work in it for essentially what the city's paying, then obviously the retainer goes down. If all of a sudden it looks like, wow, you guys are putting in 60 and 70 hours a month, then I think it's fair for us to say, perhaps we should adjust this.
Well, certainly you're not aware of our legal issues yet.
No.
And so that's hard to – it's hard to come to a dollar amount or whatever. So thank you.
But the point is trying to be fair and trying to have a happy client.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of this game.
Absolutely.
Thank you. One quick question for you. So as far as cities go, who do you see yourself being responsible to? If two council members came to you, three council members came to you, there's a conflict, residents contacted you, how do you see your responsibility, and how do you manage who you're reporting back to or how you're handling people that are coming to you?
Well, obviously city action is through the council and sometimes through the executive officer of the city. But I see no problem if a council person comes to me or three or four and talks to me about a legal issue, and if I can help them and facilitate better governance, I'm going to talk to them. I think that's fine. But ultimately, what happens here in terms of not only policy, but in terms of the laws that are passed and essentially the power, if you will, of operating the city, it's the collective body as a whole. That's what really makes it work. But I think you talk to anybody that you think you can constructively interact with hopefully makes the city work better and the governance work better and everybody get along better. Once again, I'm part of the team. That's the way I look at it as a city attorney. And hopefully we're trying to all have some consensus about what makes sense for the city. And if I can facilitate that, I'll do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sterba.
Okay,
appreciate you being here.
Yep.
All right. Our friends from Smith Hartfixen, you're up next. If you wouldn't mind introducing each person go from there.
My name is Craig Smith. On my left is Katie Steffi, and on my right is Jeff Gittens. They're both partners of mine, and frankly, they're smarter than me, and that's why I like to have them around. So let me just tell you a little bit about our firm. I don't think you'll find another firm that has the depth of expertise that we have. We have a lot of expertise, and I think a lot of areas that you probably need help in. We represent a lot of cities. We do represent as general counsel some cities, as city attorney, but more importantly, we represent cities as their water council, their redevelopment council, their land use council, their construction council. And that's, I think, what we have to offer that I think is maybe a little bit different than what everybody else you might be talking to. And I don't know, frankly, I don't know that because I don't know who all you're talking to. But our approach is a preventative law and team approach. And what I mean by that is one of the things we like to do is keep our clients out of trouble. We think we can do a better job of that. It's like that old commercial you've probably seen about, you know, it's a guy at the sort of Pennzoil or something, and he said, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. One lawsuit costs a lot more than other things that we can do. When I say a team approach, we'll try to have the best person for the best issue. I don't know everything about everything. I think I know a lot about a couple things, but I have some great partners and great associates and even some of council people that are former judges that work with our firm. So we have a broad base of experience, and we do litigation, we do administrative work, we do transactional work. We've done all those things for cities and others. We've also worked for private clients, so we're not just on one side of the fence all the time. And we have a lot of experience representing private clients. I haven't done really any work, I don't think, here in Cedar Hill, so hopefully I won't be hearing a conflict question today, at least none that I'm aware of. But that's kind of who we are, and that's what we do. We'd like to have a chance to represent Cedar Hills. We think we can do a good job. If we didn't think we could do a good job, we wouldn't be here. We're busy. We have other work to do. But we like, you know, like Mr. Sturba said, and Mr. Alstrom, who I know both those guys, and they're good attorneys. We like this kind of work, and we've had some municipal clients and other clients we've had for 20 years. The firm's been around since 2002. So I don't think we're going anywhere. We're here to stay. So that's my opening remarks.
Thank you. You don't have to go in through all cities, but about how many cities do you represent?
We've got as city attorney, we got about five really, and they're small. They're small cities.
Okay.
And the only one that we're doing, I think, a substantial amount of work for right now is Duchesne City, and that's because they're tied up in some pretty important litigation that we're handling for them. But we act as city attorneys, like Duchesne, Orangeville. I mean, some of them are pretty small. Castledale,
okay.
Corinne, you know, few, there's, I'm sure I'm leaving out some others. Mighton, Fairview.
Fair enough.
But I grew up down in Carbon County, and I think kind of everybody needs to have legal representation and should have good legal representation.
Okay. Let me ask another question or two. The local government trust, do you have any conflicts of interest that would prevent you from suing them?
No, it's funny. We've sent two letters on behalf of two cities to the local government trust on coverage issues. We haven't fortunately had to go to court because the local government trust, after we sent them the letters and met with them, saw things our way. And we were able to get coverage for those two clients. We don't take cases from the local. We're not tied into the insurance networks. I mean, that's a different deal than what we do. And so we're not part of IRMA. We're not part of local government trust. We work for individual clients. We don't end up working for the insurance companies. It's just something we've just never really done. We've done a little bit of it, but we don't represent any. Nobody. We do not take assignments from the local government's trust. And frankly, we had, I think, a very. I should let Katie talk about this because she really handled this case. But we had a very good experience in taking a situation where they were denying coverage and got it covered and got things taken care of.
Thank you very much. Have you dealt with so-called sovereign citizens? And if so, how do you recommend cities deal with vexatious litigants like that?
I'm like Katie. She's done more of that than I have. I'm going to let her talk about that.
Most recent one that I've dealt with was a citizen in South Salt Lake. He was very notorious for filing and refiling and refiling his refilings over and over again. And with those citizens, it's clear you're not going to be able to talk them out of their conduct, and you just need to go to court and show the court exactly what they're doing. And that's what we did. The court issued a ruling pretty quickly in our favor. Again, he refiled and refiled, and the court simply ignored the filings, and he's no longer bothering the city anymore.
Wonderful. Thank you. Counsel, your time.
I have a question. Mine's quick. You have a three-person team. I know your firm's very large.
We're not that large. I mean, we're about 12 attorneys.
Okay, there's
a lot bigger firms than it, but
your headline is pretty big. Well, as I read all the names, but anyway, would you designate one person then to be the city attorney here, or would you do it as a team effort?
Well, I think just for communication, we'd probably have one person, then a backup to that person would be the key contacts and would act as the city attorney and, for lack of a better term, assistant city attorney. And that way you're not having to, just to make sure the flow of information, the continuity is there. That's how we would do that.
But behind the scenes, we would then make sure that each of the issues are assigned to those individuals who have that area of expertise. So, for instance, if you have an employee handbook that needs to be reviewed, we would have the employee attorney, the labor and employment law attorney, review that. So that you're not paying more for an attorney who's not familiar with that area of practice to get up to speed in order to do that.
All right. Thank you.
Can you tell me what your experience is with Grandma, which I'm sure is quite a bit with all these cities, and also if you ever appear before the State Records Committee on behalf of a city?
Yeah, we've been on both. You know, frankly, we haven't had a lot of problems with Grandma on either side. I think the law is pretty straightforward. We've obviously had to redact some things over time if they're involving litigation on a Grandma request, but fortunately, our clients haven't had, I think you have had, from what I gather, some serious issues with Grandma here. We haven't had a lot of difficulty. I mean, we've had a lot of experience, but it's gone very smooth. I don't know, Jeff, do you have anything you want to, and we've done Grandma requests, and we think the law is pretty clear in that area and pretty straightforward and seems to work.
And have you appeared before the State Records Committee on behalf of the city?
I've never had to do that. I've never had an issue go there. I did talk to the Bluffdale city attorney the other day, who used to work at our firm and is now full-time with Bluffdale, and his belief is you should have him go to district court rather than that group, but that's his opinion. I mean, I would certainly, talk to people who have done that. I just haven't had to have not had to do that, fortunately. Again, we try to keep our view is, if you don't want to get into huge conflicts. If you do, we can take care of them. But if you don't have to get into them, let's stay out of them.
I have a question. So Eric Johnson, who is our current city attorney, he used to work with you guys, if I understand it right.
He did.
Are you guys on? How did that separation happen? Are you guys on good working terms? Do you think the information would flow, nicely from him to you guys? What's the working relationship like there?
Yeah, we have a good relationship. Eric has a little bit different approach to practice of law than maybe we have, and that's probably why he's not with us. But there was no hard feelings and no difficulty. We've done a number. I don't know, Jeff, you've probably done the most with Eric.
Yeah, we've done a lot with Eric. I mean, because he does a lot of bond work, and we represent a lot, again, of cities and districts who are getting funding, getting bonds, and so we've worked a lot with him. We have a good working relationship with him. I don't see any problem with it.
If you were to pin down the one difference, you mentioned that you guys approach things differently. If you were to pin down the biggest difference, what would that be?
It's a team approach. Eric's a very smart guy and a very good attorney, but with Eric, it was Eric's clients, not the firm's clients. And that's just how he sees life, and some people see it that way. We see it a different way, which is we're stronger together as a team. I'm not always available. Jeff's not always available. Sometimes we're in court. Sometimes we're in other places. And you need to have somebody that when you reach out and need a question answered, somebody can answer your question as quickly as possible. You don't want to wait, two or three days or till the next day. Our goal is to try to answer questions that day. And if there's somebody should be available to do that.
And who are you proposing to assign as lead attorney to our city, and who would be assistant and why?
Well, we haven't got a proposal on that. Frankly, I would need to have more information about what your needs are and what your issues, the big issues you're facing, and then based on that input, we would discuss together who would be the best people to make those assignments to. I mean, I just don't, frankly, know much about what you're. I did a little Googling on last Saturday just for fun, but I frankly been busy since then. So I saw there were some issues with Grandma, and I saw the couple things that were there, and. But, I would need to have a better idea of kind of – but one thing I would suggest that during the first, 6 months, we would put more time – you say, well, how much time will you take? We would take more time in the first 6 months to review your ordinances, review your policies, to review your employee handbook, to review your water rights, all those sorts of things. I assume you have some water rights. I hope you do. All those sorts of things to, again – by fixing anything we saw as problems there, we think we can prevent further that our involvement would be less further down the road, because again, a lot of times when you get into conflicts is because, you know, maybe your ordinance hasn't been updated, doesn't track with what's the current state law, and or maybe some court case has come on and you need to change some things. You know, law changes all the time. It's not static.
One additional question: how did you find out about this opening?
I believe we got an email from someone at the city asking us to submit an RFQ.
Do you know who it was, out of curiosity?
I don't remember.
Okay. And then, do you guys have any relationship with anyone in the city? Do you guys have any type of working relationship with anyone in the city at this point?
Not that I'm aware of. Again, we did work with the city before when Eric was at our firm. In fact, while I was driving up here, I was thinking that it was 10 years ago last month that I first joined Smith Harvickson. I was still a law student at BYU. And my very first day, the very first thing I did was I did a research project on an issue that was in Cedar Hills. So we do have some experience with the city in the past, but it's been several years, so I'm sure there's probably not many here that know who we are and that we've dealt with in the past. But so I'm not aware of any ongoing relationships.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Gustis, you have some questions?
One of the questions I asked before. So cities oftentimes are very tight with budgets because we have to account for all of our tax dollars, and we have to be very judicial in how we're going out and spending our residents' tax dollars. So based on our budget, because we're currently in the middle of, well, we're just coming to the end of our fiscal year, but coming up on the next one, are you able to either reduce your retainer or your hourly fee in order to meet cities' budgets?
Yes, we certainly can. We can certainly do that. What we'd like to do is, if we were chosen, we'd sit down and talk about, okay, what are your priorities? What things do you need to get done now? What things can wait till later? And try to adjust that. Again, a lot of times it's, you know, some discussion up front with any client, and that's not just cities. Every client has budgetary restrictions, and we work with a lot of smaller entities. Some of the cities I mentioned are a lot smaller than Cedar Hills. We represent, the joke around our office in our water practice is, you know, water rich, money poor. I mean, that's kind of how a lot of water entities are, and water companies run on shoestrings. And so we understand that, and we can, you know, we've dealt with those kinds of real world things. I mean, someday I guess maybe we will have a client that says just, you know, do whatever, but it just doesn't happen.
Those are always the ones you hope for. So what kind of hours would you anticipate directing towards our city on a monthly basis, then?
I would, and again, this is just guessing, you know, 15 to 20, but I'm just guessing. I don't know what kind of issues you're facing. I don't know if you know, how much. Again, the things that take the most time is litigation. Litigation is the most time-wasting experience in human existence, and I do a lot of that. And it just takes a lot. So fortunately, you know, if you have litigation, that'll take time. If we can keep out of litigation, that will take less time. And again, that's the old, you know, a little bit now or a lot later.
You're saying that litigation is more time wasting than my kids playing video games all day?
Unfortunately, yes.
Let me just add one thing on that. Because as Craig mentioned, we represent cities of all sizes. We represent towns that have less than 1,000 people. We represent cities that have tens of thousands of people. But we've been in this business long enough to know that if you're a big city, that doesn't mean you always have big problems, and if you're a small town, it doesn't mean you always have small problems. So you have to adjust your work not only to the client but to the individual matter. And some matters can be resolved with a 10-minute phone call. Some may require a couple of hours of research. If you get in a big, vexatious lawsuit, it takes a lot of time. But one of our greatest strengths, I think, is we're able to adjust our practice to the individual needs not only of the client but of the matter, the individual matters that those clients have.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one other quick question. So if appearing before the State Records Committee, would that be, in your eyes, a litigation matter?
I would think it's more of an administrative matter. I mean, we do a lot of administrative practice as well. And water rights practice is a lot administrative. We also do a lot of public utility practice. So, yeah, I mean, litigation to me is you're in court in front of a judge who is wearing a robe. That's litigation. Other sorts of things like that are administrative.
Thank you very much for coming tonight.
Can I ask one more question, Mayor?
Sure.
Sorry. What's your approach for dealing with a developer who might threaten to sue if his development is not approved?
Unfortunately, there are some developers that's kind of their MO these days, and I've dealt with them before. I don't want to name names and their attorneys. And frankly, I think we have a reputation that we don't get pushed around in this business. if he's got something legitimate, sure, we'd listen to him. But just because he says he's going to sue, anybody can file a lawsuit that wants, that has a typewriter and can spend, what is it, $350. I mean, that's just, and if we govern ourselves by fear of litigation, you won't be able to do your jobs. And that's our job, is to let you run the city and not be, you know, bullied by threats of litigation. Now, you know, obviously, if we do something wrong, we got to deal with it. We need to fix some ordinances. We need to deal with it. We'll do that. But just because somebody comes in and says they're going to file a lawsuit, so what? Katie's done a lot of lawsuits. I've done a lot. We got other people. One of our attorneys has spent 16 years on the bench as a judge. We've seen it come and we've seen it go. And it does come and go. Sometimes not as fast as you'd like. But.
Are we good?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up is Heidemann Associates.
Good evening. Mr. Mayor, it's a pleasure to be present tonight. We actually prepared a very brief one-page summary that I thought might answer some questions that potentially you might be asking. And to the extent that you don't, then that's fine. We're happy to answer anything that you might. But hopefully this can be somewhat helpful. The reality is you're interviewing six different law firms tonight. I doubt seriously that any of those law firms are not qualified, or they wouldn't be here. So the real question is, what separates a law firm, or what distinguishes them from someone else? And what might make them more attractive to your city as opposed to another service provider? Hopefully this very brief outline can offer some of the things that we think differentiate us from those in the same market. That having been said, my understanding is this is your opportunity to interview us, and I hate to answer questions nobody's asking. So to the extent that you've got them, fire away.
Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. How many cities do you represent?
We don't represent any cities specifically. We do represent Provo School District, and as we indicated in our note, we've been involved with either litigation or counseling with attorneys for approximately 27 or 28 cities. I think we forgot the city of Vineyard, and that's probably the most recent one we've done.
Okay. Next question. Do you have any conflicts of interest that would prevent you from representing our city and suing the local trust for non-coverage?
None.
Okay, thank you.
We like suing the trust, actually. We've done that a lot.
Okay. Next question. Are you familiar with dealing with so-called sovereign citizens?
Yes. If I had known that was going to be one of the questions, I would have added another page to my document where I got to deal.
How do you recommend cities deal with them?
I think it's very specific. I think you have to be direct, you have to be honest, you have to be open, and you have to be blunt. The reality is the individual I would refer you to is a gentleman by the name of Elmo Fred Griffiths, who believed he was a sovereign citizen, expatriated back to the Treaty of Versailles. That having been said, these individuals tend to be litigious. They tend to not be terribly reasonable. That having been said, they also want someone to listen to them. And I will tell you that in the course of my dealing with these individuals on an all too frequent basis, particularly as plaintiff's counsel, they want to seek us out. If you'll listen to them, oftentimes you can identify for them why they might not be correct in their legal theory as opposed to the idea that they're sovereign. But the reality is sometimes they just don't want to listen. And when that happens, you just have to make them.
Okay. Counsel, it's your time.
Okay, so you said you didn't represent any cities currently, so why do you want to represent us?
Great question.
What's the nutshell version?
I'm tired of fighting the Governmental Immunity Act and decided to get on the other side of it so I could use it as defense. That's really the issue. I mean, a city is a wonderful client to have, and one of the things that I point out here is that you would be a big client for our firm. You'd have top billing. You'd be at the head of the list. When I say top billing, I don't mean you'd get the biggest bill. It's just simply that we would have the opportunity to serve you because you wouldn't be lost in the shuffle. You wouldn't be one of the 30 other cities we have. You would be the city we have.
Thank you.
What's your strong point? What do you normally work on? What's your strong point then if you're not normally representing cities? What's your normal?
We litigate against cities. We sue them all the time for what they do wrong on a myriad of different areas. We also handle a lot of complex corporate litigation. We start banks. We do a lot of banking law. We do a lot of securities law. But from day one in my practice, I've been involved in municipal civil rights litigations. I've been involved in contract litigations against cities. And I have several litigations ongoing currently against municipal entities.
How did you find out about this position opening?
We received an email, and I want to say it was from Gordon. From Gretchen. Gretchen Gordon, I believe, is the last name. Yeah. And I apologize. I didn't introduce some of the people that are with me. This is Brent Massell, and this is Jeff Bissinger. Both of them are associate attorneys in my firm. This is Alex Hamlin. He is my chief bookkeeper. I thought to the extent that you might have any questions about finance and how we do our billings, you might be able to address them directly to the guy that you talk to.
How do you guys know Gretchen? Have you guys worked
with her? We don't. I got an email through, and her name was there, and I sent an email back asking some questions about this format.
Do you have any contact or relation with anyone within the city here?
I do not, although I did hear Mayor Gigi's advertisements at one point in time. That's about it.
Okay, so give me like the 30-second version of how you see your billing, how it would benefit our city.
We have a very flexible billing structure, and not only that, we see our clients on their individual needs for billing. We take quick phone calls and don't charge you for them because it took 2 minutes to call us. And we view the client's financial perspective as what they are trying to achieve and not what we are trying to achieve from a billing standpoint. If you tell us that we have X amount of dollars to achieve a goal, we'll do everything we can, including working extra hours that we don't bill you for, to try and achieve that within reason. We find that that's been phenomenal in earning clients' trust and referrals, business, things like that, because we prove to them through money that money isn't everything for our company.
Okay, thank you.
Can you tell me what experience you have with Grandma and if you've ever appeared before the State Records Committee?
I've never appeared in front of the State Records Committee, but I have caused cities to not want to have to appear in front of the State Records Committee. I've issued I don't know how many Grandma requests in the course of my career, and I hesitate to say I could quote it, but if you really want to get bored, I could probably spend a lot of time doing close to that. The fact that we've litigated, argued, done motions to compel, filed orders to show cause, and addressed, as far as I know, every issue that exists with regard to Grandma, I feel pretty comfortable with it. But again, I've never appeared in front of the Records Committee. Okay.
Your quote says 200. I guess I can't say that.
You're welcome to say it. I don't mind. I don't have anything to hide.
That might be wrong to say. So for the first while or whatnot, do you separate your billing between different professionals? So if we have one professional, we'll be billed one rate. So it's different based on who services us.
Absolutely.
It'd be nice to know that range, but you don't have to tell me right now, but sometime I'd like to know.
I don't mind telling you if the committee wants me to know or the mayor allows me to do so. It doesn't bother me. I don't have anything to hide. So the reality is, as a senior partner in the firm with 15 years experience, I normally bill at $275 an hour. We reduced you to $245. For those of us that are junior associates, meaning less than 10 years of experience, we bill them at about $220. And then for support staff, we bill at $110 if they're a law clerk, and lesser staff at $95.
Okay. Any other questions?
So how many hours do you see dedicating each month toward Cedar Hills?
Absolutely as many as it takes. In other words, if you've got a need, I'm going to address that need, or our firm is going to address that need until you're satisfied. And we're going to limit that to the extent reasonable. But I'm not afraid to bill a client for a job well done. What I don't want to do is bill a client for a job that wasn't done well.
So quantify that a little bit. What is reasonable?
Well, quite frankly, I identified two specific things. One is the most recent litigation case that you had, I apparently was dismissed without prejudice in February of this year. I would anticipate because it was without prejudice, it's likely to come back. Litigation is notoriously expensive. Normally we bill about or require a retainer fee of about $7,500 to get going, and we anticipate that your initial complaint is going to run you about 35 hours.
But we're talking about admin at this point,
yep,
and not litigation.
Sure.
And so how many hours a month would you dedicate to our firm for administrative issues?
We would be willing to, again, to dedicate whatever is necessary, but my expectation pursuant to my understanding of the city's needs is going to be probably between 25 and 32.
Okay, very good.
How would you deal with an issue if a city said, we'd like you to spend no more than 4 hours on this topic, but it would take 10 hours to get fully up to speed with the topic? How would you deal with that if they said they only wanted to pay for 4 hours?
You know what? I think the person that can answer that best is the person that sees my billings. So I'm just going to let Alex answer it.
Most of the time, what we'll try to do is come to some type of compromise in that situation. We'll just tell you straight up, hey, look, this is, we anticipate 10 hours of work for this. You want four. We can achieve with better efficiencies in our firm 8 hours of work by doing six. And so essentially, you'd be getting 2 hours worth of work for free. We'd have to shave some off the top of the issue that you need, but at the same time, we'd be shaving off cost for the city.
At the end of the day, though, the project's got to be done. And if we're at 6 hours and that's all we're allotted and we need another four, then you're going to get another four.
And we'll be billed for it?
Nope.
Okay. Any other questions, anybody?
No.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Have a good evening.
You too. Callister, Nebaker, and McCullough, please.
If it's all right, I'll go ahead and make a short statement to introduce myself.
Please.
This is my son and associate, Spencer Topham. I'm Shane Topham. We're both lawyers with the law firm of Collister, Nebaker, and McCullough in downtown Salt Lake City. It's about a 50, mid-40s, I think now, lawyer firm. And Spencer has been with the firm for about 7 years, counting the couple of years that he clerked while he was in law school. We enjoy working together very, very much. I sometimes think he wasn't watching and listening while he was growing up and watching me, but when he decided to go to law school, but he enjoys it, and it's a lot of fun for us to work together. After graduating from law school in 1984, my practice initially focused on commercial litigation. Over time, I gradually transitioned more into business and real estate. For the past 20 years, I've represented cities a good part of my time. So that means, and I continue to do work in commercial transactions of various types, real estate development, things like that, for private clients. And so what that means to me, I think one thing we offer is that we have broad experience in drafting contracts, in land use issues, and in the other issues that oftentimes face cities. I got involved in local government law after deciding to try to help incorporate the area of Holiday in Salt Lake County that I moved to in 1986. I served as unpaid legal counsel to three successive incorporation efforts. The city was ultimately incorporated, and I served as its first city attorney. For the past 10 years, I've been Cottonwood Heights city attorney in Salt Lake County. If you're not familiar with that city, it's between Sandy and Holiday in Midvale. There are about 35,000-37,000 residents. Over the past 20 years, I've also done legal work for Taylorsville, Harriman, Eagle Mountain, and a couple of special service districts. Besides doing all the legal work to successfully incorporate both Holiday and Cottonwood Heights, I work closely with the mayors and councils to formulate policies and procedures for the new cities. I also work to set up Holiday's Justice Court. Over the years, I've negotiated and drafted all types of interlocal agreements and service contracts with public and private providers, and I've dealt with employee issues, annexation issues, grandma issues, difficult land use issues, and all the other issues that have faced the cities that I've represented. I've attended literally hundreds of city council meetings, planning commission meetings, and appeal authority meetings, so I think I'm very familiar with the public process. I've drafted literally hundreds of pieces of legislation, ordinances, and resolutions for the city councils to consider. I formulated codes of ordinances for the cities I've represented. I have to say that professionally and personally, I've had a wonderful time. I consider my work for cities to be a form of public service, just as you do in your service as elected officers, and I always try to remember that I'm about the public's business. I count the elected and appointed officers and employees of the cities as my friends, and I also strive to maintain cordial relations with the citizens that choose to become engaged in the public process. So that said, I'll turn some time over to Spencer so that he can introduce himself, and following that, we'll be happy to take whatever questions you'd like to give to us.
Good evening. We appreciate the City Council and the Mayor having us out tonight. As my father said, I'm Spencer Topham. I'm a fifth-year associate at Collister, Debeker, and McCullough. And after clerking at the firm for 2 years during law school, I was honored to be offered a position as an attorney there when I graduated in 2010, because 2010 wasn't the best legal market to graduate into. Anyone who's familiar with the legal market at that time? During my time clerking and practicing at the firm, I've assisted my father and several other members of the firm representing municipalities, including contracting, employment, grandma issues, law enforcement, and variety of other issues that affect municipalities. There always seems to be a new issue. Our firm's local government practice is fairly substantial. Besides my dad's expertise, our attorneys include Brian Burnett, who's represented a number of municipalities in utility and energy matters, Michael Stanger, who has litigated public and private employment matters in both the state and federal courts fairly extensively, also Michael Walsh, who was on the Highland Planning Commission for 7 years and the Highland Appeal Authority for 5 years. Several other members of our firm, Wally Lloyd and John Walsh, are experts in ERISA and employee benefit matters and have represented municipalities in any of those issues, as well as negotiations with the Utah retirement system. Because of that, we feel like we, our firm knows the lay of the land when it comes to representing municipalities, both the issues and the principal players, and we pride ourselves on being innovative, thorough, careful, and responsive to the cities that we serve. We recognize that our job is to find a way to legally accomplish the policy decisions that are made by the city's elected and appointed officials, and to help city officers wend their way kind of safely through the minefield of legal issues and competing interests that face cities. I definitely feel like our firm has the experience and capacity to handle the city's legal needs in a proficient, timely fashion. We can handle kind of the purely municipal work, such as drafting resolutions and ordinances, but we can also bring pretty significant experience to bear on transactional matters facing the city, such as leasing, supply equipment contracts, land acquisitions, many other areas. Expert litigation support is also available from our firm's litigation department, as I mentioned, expertise in employment, water law, and other areas. So, as I said, we pride ourselves on our thoroughness, timeliness, and expertise, and if named as the city attorney for Cedar Hills, proficiently meeting the city's legal needs will be my primary professional focus. I will personally do all the work, consulting with my father and other members of the firm as needed, be here with you at city council meetings, providing an element of personal interest and continuity that you'll find beneficial. Again, we really appreciate the chance to be here tonight. You have a beautiful city here, and we're happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Topham. If I may, I'm familiar with your firm. You got a good-sized firm. Are you aware of any conflicts of interest that would prevent you from representing our city if we were to choose to sue the local government's trust for non-coverage?
I do not believe so.
No, we would have no conflict. The Conwood Heights is also a member of the local government's trust, but we, if they're not covering, we would be available to sue them.
Okay, thank you. Next question. Are you familiar with so-called sovereign citizens? If so, how would you recommend cities deal with them?
And well, I have never had to personally deal with a sovereign citizen, and so I overheard what the prior speaker said, and I think that's good counsel. Probably listen to them, but to be firm.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, time's yours.
I'm sure I can tell from your RFP that you have extensive grama experience. Have you ever appeared before the State Records Committee on behalf of a city?
I have, yes.
Are you still asking questions?
That's my...
Okay.
I guess all the other ones seem to say if you have, then it's probably because there's a failure somewhere along the way. How would you respond to that?
I don't know that we failed. I would say that we ended up prevailing for the most part. The person that we were having an issue with was a citizen activist who jettisoned most of his claims as we went through the process, and so I think that we took the correct position as we went along. We try to look at them very carefully. We have an internal appeal, as I'm sure you do here, and we use that as a time to look very carefully at what's being asked and making sure that our position is defensible.
Mr. Geddes, any questions?
I can't think of. Thank you for you answered several during the course of your presentation. Thank you,
Mr. Augustus.
Can you just go back? What cities have you represented, if you care to say? And then also, do you have any that you're currently representing?
Yes, I've been city attorney for Cottonwood Heights for the past 10 years, and still am acting in that capacity. And part of the reason. A big part of the reason that we would have Spencer be your primary contact is that Cottonwood Heights City Council meetings are every Tuesday night, not just a couple, every Tuesday night.
Right.
When a month has five Tuesdays, why then we might get one off. It's been 10 years, and I keep thinking it's going to change, but it hasn't. And so Spencer is available on Tuesday nights. I would be available on an as-needed basis if there's an issue that that would need my expertise or perspective. I was the initial city attorney for Holiday, served in that capacity for a little over 2 years. I was a political casualty of the first mayor, who in turn was shown the door by the residents who changed the form of government I think, who was in the mayor's seat. That was one of the things that happened as a result of that, and Holiday has operated very smoothly since then, but by then Cottonwood Heights had come along, and that's where I've very much enjoyed practicing with that group. It's just a fabulous group of folks over the years that I've worked with.
And so no other cities outside of Cottonwood?
No, I've not served as a city attorney. I have done work for Harriman and Taylorsville and Eagle Mountain and a couple of special service districts.
Okay. And then what hours do you see dedicating to Cedar Hills on a monthly basis?
I wasn't exactly sure in the response exactly, you know, what issues you're facing. I know prosecution is part of that, but, you know, it just kind of depends on what comes up. But, you know, I am available to dedicate whatever the city requires for the most part currently. So, just kind of depends on the needs of the city.
Can I just ask a clarifying question on that? You say prosecution. We've never prosecuted anyone. So do you mean litigation if you're serving as our attorney when we're on the defense?
I understood that there was municipal misdemeanor prosecutions.
Can I address that?
Yes, sure.
Sorry. Currently, our agreement with the American Fork Police Department, they provide the litigation for any prosecution that the city does. So that's currently being done through American Fork Police Department through two other firms. So just to clarify that.
Okay, thank you.
But we do that. Those are invoices that the city does receive in the event of prosecution.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, my misunderstanding, but I thought that sounded in the RFQ that like that was part of it. So if that's not part of it, you know, like I said in my response, we're happy to formulate, you know, something that is, you know, to the best interest of the city that will, you know, work going forward.
I want to dig down a little bit, just because it's important to us. I think how many hours are unreasonable and what is reasonable for administrative items on a monthly basis. Obviously, if we were to say 100 hours a month, that is unreasonable. Yeah. But what would be reasonable?
Well, as we've discussed it, we think that we looked at your budgets on the state website, and it looks like you've been spending between $80,000 and $150,000 a year on city attorney services. We assume that the couple of years where you were spending significantly over $100,000 a year were years when you had litigation going on. We can't tell you what litigation will cost. You all know that it costs what it costs, and you have to do what you have to do to protect the city's interests. We think that for standard city attorney services, we'd probably be looking at maybe 50 or 60 hours a month.
Say 50 or 60 hours a month.
We imagine a couple of city council meetings, a couple of planning commission meetings, if you would want us to attend that, perhaps appeal authority meetings as they come along, drafting all the legislation, reviewing contracts, answering day-to-day questions. On average, we think that's probably about what it would take.
Thank you very much. Dave, go ahead, Jenny. I think you were going to say something.
So if you reviewed our website, you've probably seen that grandma is a huge issue for Cedar Hills. We have some very large tens of thousands of pages requests from a certain individual. So as part of your administrative duties, would that include reviewing our grammar requests, making sure redactions are happening appropriately, reviewing our redaction log, et cetera?
Absolutely. Our approach in Cottonwood Heights is to work with the city recorder. I assume that the city recorder is your grammar officer. To when a grammar request comes in, we look at it, we discuss it. The recorder then takes the laboring oar to work with IT staff, whoever is needed, to produce the records, and then those folks will generally go through the response to remove duplicates and overlaps and things like that. Once they have the pile of documents down to where they think there are things that are subject to being produced, we then will come in and review every page to every word to make sure that we think it needs to be produced, to make sure that there isn't private control or protected information in them that needs to be redacted, and then we will direct the redactions. We will edit and sometimes author the initial grandma response letter, and then if there's an internal appeal, we handle that. If there's an appeal to the records committee, we will handle that.
Follow-up question to that. So if there is 10,000 pages, you'd bill us for reading every single word.
Well,
that's a little concerning.
I don't know how to get past it. We do it very fast, and we can look at the subject matter, and a lot of things have overlap of an email strings where they're already discarded. I personally have never had to do a 10,000 page one, but we've had pretty big ones, 1,000 or more pages that we've had to go through.
Mr. Cipolla, do you have any questions? Mrs. Reisch?
So when appearing before the State Records Committee, do you view that as litigation or as administrative?
Well, I think I probably view it more as administrative. It's not going to go on and on, typically. You prepare your briefs, you go to the hearing, and you will typically get a decision. Sometimes you'll have to go back. So I don't view it as in the same nature as general civil litigation, where much of what you're doing is going to be determined by what the other side chooses to do.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
All right, finally, Curtin McConkie.
Dave, do most of the talking here.
Hopefully the mic will reach. Thanks. just like to explain Curtin McConkie just a little bit, and then happy to open up questions. Curtin McConkie believes we provide many key benefits to the city of Cedar Hills. Chief among these are many of the members of our team live here in Utah County, close to your city. We're within 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of where we sit today on this beautiful place. We have offices downtown, but more importantly, for your purposes, we have an office just up the street in Thanksgiving Point. So we're close, we're accessible. We have the experience of three former in-house city attorneys. who have represented more than 20 years of collective experience in that capacity. We've been inside. We know what it's like to work as in-house city attorneys. We know what it's like to get the billings of outside city attorneys and outside special attorneys. So we're very sensitive, not only to those issues, but to your budget issues. We have a backup bench of 144 additional attorneys with similar experience. We have a deep bench. The experience of an attorney who has served as a city council member, and I think you're familiar with Mr. Ed. The experience of an attorney who has served as a police officer. The experience of an attorney who has served as bond counsel to municipalities. The experience of an attorney who is well-versed in interlocal cooperative matters and special service districts. The experience of an attorney who has served as issuer's counsel to local political subdivisions. The experience of attorneys who have successfully defended local political subdivisions at all levels of Utah's court systems. The experience of attorneys who have represented matters before planning and zoning commissions, boards of adjustment, both from the perspective of the municipality and, importantly, as well as the perspective of the requesting developer. We have the experience of attorneys who have represented all kinds of municipal utilities, including water, sewer, wastewater, electricity, garbage collection, recycling, and I guess if you stretch the use of the word utility, even to golf courses. The experience of attorneys who are knowledgeable about grandma, election laws, constitutional issues, employment matters, and many other matters affecting municipalities. We do not currently represent any of the city's neighboring municipalities. Therefore, any adversarial positions that you're involved in, even if they're friendly, we do not have any conflicts. And our proposal has been designed specifically to be budget conscious while providing the type of representation you would expect from the state's largest law firm.
Can I introduce everyone?
Yes, please.
So Dave has hit the key points that we wanted to get to. We'll briefly introduce and give our, you know, kind of background and go from there. I just wanted to say that if we are chosen, myself and my family will adopt the lowest common denominator of political involvement that any city elected official wants us. We've been really involved for 10 years. To have an official excuse for a vacation from Cedar Hills politics would be welcome in many ways. Also, I think we have the biggest real estate practice, land use and zoning, in the state of Utah. We really understand these issues. Developers are very good. They frequently come to you with deals that are kind of heads I win, tails you lose. And I think we'd be very good at helping you structure deals where the city's interests are protected. So, of course, you know me. This is my friend Chris Bramhall. He worked with the city of Salt Lake for 13 years. We'll have him speak in a second. This is my colleague, Elisa Dishman, who just joined us. She worked in Washington, D.C. for 7 years. We're really glad to get her. And my friend Drew Clark, who I've known for over 20 years, and we were very fortunate to hire 2 years ago. And I'll let them each say a little bit, and then we'll open up for questions.
Thank you very much. Are any of you...
Oh, Mayor, we have 1 more minute, and each of them will say something real quick.
Go right ahead.
Does that work? Again, my name is Chris Bramhall. I've been with Curtin & McConkie for 8 years now, and the previous 13 years, almost 13 years, I served in the Salt Lake City Attorney's Office. Was involved in many wonderful projects with Salt Lake City. Before that, I was a municipal bond attorney, so I've been involved with cities in one form or another my entire career. My principal areas of focus with Salt Lake City was, number one, the Public Utilities Department. So water law, which is my current primary practice, sewer, storm drain, all of those kind of issues. Transportation and telecommunications and telephone franchising was also things that I did. But I worked on, you know, just a vast variety of things, including grandma and construction projects and so forth. One project that I've recently worked on that you may be familiar with I'm general counsel to the Provo River Water Users Association, and we recently enclosed the Provo Reservoir Canal, which really benefits all the communities in this northern part of the county. And that was really a wonderful experience. We got to work with a lot of the cities through this area. So with that, I'll pass the mic to the next person.
The city voted for it by 3-2. They were for it.
My name is Elisa Dishman. I'm a lateral associate at Curtin McConkie. I am also in the real estate practice. I do real estate purchase, leasing, real estate litigation involving developers and cities, some grandma work, and that's my experience. I'm delighted to be back here in Utah.
My name is Drew Clark, and my focus is on telecommunications and technology corporate practice. Happy to work with you if it's convenient for you, and look forward to your questions now.
Okay, so are any of you gentlemen or lady former city attorneys? You mentioned that you have some that work for your firm.
Yes, my name is David Shaw. I started my career as an assistant city attorney at Murray City and served there for 6 years. And Mr. Bramhall spoke to his experience at Salt Lake City. We also have, as part of our team who's not here tonight, Mr. Bob McKinley, who has served as city attorney to two municipalities in Missouri.
Okay. And do any of you currently represent cities?
Do you want to speak to that?
I represent Grantsville City on water matters.
Okay.
I'm not their general counsel.
And
we represent probably about 1,000, maybe almost 20 cities on various matters over the last 10 years.
Who does?
Our firm.
Your firm.
Yeah.
Okay. And are you folks in the Utah County office or the downtown Salt Lake City office?
Everybody except Mr. Bramhall is in the Utah County office.
Thanksgiving point. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Local government trust. And your firm's reputation precedes you. I've used you. You guys are a really good firm. You're very large. And so my question is, are you aware of any conflicts of interest that would prohibit you from representing the city if we were to choose to sue the local government trust for non-coverage?
At this point, we're not aware of any conflicts in that.
Okay, very good. You familiar with so-called sovereign citizens? And if so, do you know how to deal with them?
Yes, sir. I've had experience at Murray City dealing with a couple of sovereign citizens. I had the fortunate pleasure of defending the city in a lawsuit along with the defendants, Bill Clinton, and one of the members of the Chicago Bulls. And in dealing with them, I agree with the advice that's already been rendered by the prior firms. You have to be firm, you have to be blunt, and you have to simply go to court and defend them, defend against them, I guess.
Thank you. Council, time is yours.
If I could just add very briefly, Roger Cutler, who was the Salt Lake City attorney for many, many years, had a state flag and a U.S. flag in his office, and the U.S. flag had a gold fringe around it, and we used to get petitions from people saying that our office didn't have the proper authority because the gold fringe somehow invalidated the validity of our office. So yes, you do get those types out there, and you just have to deal with them.
Excuse me.
On that one too.
I have a couple questions for you. One is, do you have a sense of who would be a lead attorney for the city and who would handle sort of day-to-day affairs?
Yes, we have a combination proposal in that, three of us who are senior shareholders at the firm would be your primary source of contact, myself principally, followed by Mr. Wright and then Mr. Bramhall, and that we would be available to you at all hours.
I believe, if I'm correct, that you're Utah's biggest law firm.
We are.
How would a small city like us get your attention?
I think the fact that five of us are here tonight, three of us senior shareholders, demonstrates our attention. Our aim is to treat every client like you're our only client.
I've got a question. Monthly retainer, would you guys consider working on an hourly basis? I'm not sure if we'd use up that much. You know, it seems a little steep as we're looking at the price. So I'm wondering if you'd consider working on an hourly basis for us, or do you strictly work on retainers with cities like us?
No, we're happy to be creative in our fee structure. Mm-hmm. The proposal that we've submitted was a start point, but we're happy to discuss that. We can be very creative in how we structure things, whether it's straight hourly, whether it's a set number of hours at a discount plus additional hourly overages if there were additional work. There are different ways that we can structure that fee proposal.
So I looked and I couldn't find a number of hours specified with your retainer. So is that anticipating that you'll just cover all of our needs, or is there an hour?
No, that was deliberate. Okay. The deliberate intention was that we will cover your needs for that cost.
Can you tell me what your experience is with Grandma and if you have ever represented the city at the State Records Committee?
Yes, I've been defending Grandma issues for my entire career. I've been practicing for 16 years. Mr. Bramhall has been defending those issues as well. Candidly, neither one of us have any experience before the State Records Committee because we've never had to. My belief is that if you handle Grandma issues appropriately at the time they come in, you most often never get to that point.
Mr. Crawley, you have any questions?
Come all out.
Mr. Geddes?
No, I think they're answered. Thank you.
Mr. Gustis?
You know, I usually try to come up with a creative question, but you guys have covered a lot of material.
I have another question.
Yeah, go please. For it.
Are you allowed to wear brown or gray suits, or do you have to wear dark? That's actually not my question.
I thought about a light gray suit this morning, but...
That's actually not my question. My question is, how would you deal with a developer who threatens litigation if his proposal isn't received and approved?
Threats of litigation are just that. They're threats. And most often, negotiation alleviates the threat of litigation. Not always, but most often. In my experience, nearly all issues can be resolved through discussion and negotiation, especially at the city level. Parties who are emotionally invested in issues tend to go to court more often. But city issues are typically business issues, and they can be negotiated, they can be discussed, and they can be handled reasonably and amicably in most cases. Again, that's not always, but in most cases. When I was at Murray City, one of the big issues was the tearing down of the smokestacks, which you may remember as former landmarks where the hospital now sits. It was a highly contentious issue, and we were successful in avoiding many threats of litigation simply through discussion.
So if there was a...
Daniel, can I add to that real quick?
Sure.
Because of the depth of our experience in real estate, we have, I think, tremendous respect with other law firms throughout the state of Utah, where we can go to them and explain, this is our understanding of the law, here's the precedent, here's what we're seeing informally, and really, if you don't like this, we'll take this right to the property rights ombudsman. It only costs a couple $1,000s. We're going to get an opinion that's strongly in our favor. Once you take that to your client, it's just not going to get you very far. And I think we have a lot of respect in that area, so we're able to solve things a lot faster.
That said, we're not afraid of court. And we have a large litigation division, and so we're not afraid of those issues, especially real estate litigation. So if push were to come to shove, we are familiar with how to deal with those issues.
So if there is a difference of opinion in terms of the scale or size of a particular project and whether that fits with the city, would you actually negotiate with the developer to try to get them to change what their project looks like?
That would depend on what the city wanted, but certainly. if that was what the city wanted. We have experience negotiating with all kinds of companies, large and small, anywhere from technology to developers to corporations, you name it. We have that experience. Personally, my practice and Mr. Clark's practice has involved technology issues with some of the biggest of the big companies out there, Microsoft, Apple, Google, you name it. Big developers, our real estate division handles all the time.
If I could just briefly add to that, I'm not a litigator. I'm a transactional attorney, and I find myself in court on occasion, and I usually bring one of my litigation partners with me. But as a transactional attorney, my goal is to stay out of court and to do the best I can to keep my client out of court. And that means approaching problems in a problem-solving mode as opposed to a combative, litigious approach. And some attorneys have a reputation of being very litigious and being willing to sue at the drop of a hat and spending their clients' money very freely. And that is not my approach. I think the best solutions are always negotiated solutions. Yes, sometimes you reach a point where you just have to let an independent arbiter or the judge decide an issue. But those are the exception to the rule. And I think hopefully my reputation precedes me in the sense that I'm perceived, I think, as somebody who can work with lots of different parties and get problems solved up front before they ripen into litigation.
One final thing I would mention on that is that even if it winds up in litigation, most cases never go to trial anyway. They get resolved somewhere along the motion timeline, or they get resolved in mediation, which is another form of negotiation. So,
I've got a quick question. Suppose a young city council person, and I'm going to tell you this is a fictitious example. There are similar things that happen, but this is fictitious. But a young city council person comes and says, "Mayor and two city council people have something that I think the residents should be aware of. But if I tell the residents, then I'm going to lose loyalty with them, and it's going to be a tough 4 years." What advice would you give to someone that's in that predicament that thinks that the residents deserve to know something, and has a decision to make whether I tell the residents or don't?
So the key issue there for us would be, is it a legal matter to begin
no.
with? If it's not a legal matter, then we probably don't have a lot of business getting involved. Political matters are those best left to the politicians.
There you go.
So one quick question, if I may. So you guys are probably, if not the biggest firm in Utah. So what interests you about Cedar Hills? Like, give us an idea of why you would want to work with a city of our size.
Frankly, we like to work with all cities. Many of us have worked with cities our entire careers, and that's what we do. And so with Cedar Hills, for me, there's a bit of an affinity. I live in Linden. I come up here. I coached football for Pleasant Grove Youth Football and had some kids from Cedar Hills on my team. So I'm a bit familiar with your city. In prior days, I spent some time on your golf course, although not very well. But for me, it's an affinity to your city, frankly.
Dave, I just add to that. I think you're a good fit for where we're already
very strong in a lot of areas like real estate, constitutional law, litigation, employment matters. It's a good fit. We don't have to reinvent the wheel to represent you. I think most of the issues, that's why we can compete on price, is because we've seen a lot of those issues. And so we can find the right person, I think, to solve something in half an hour that other people might take, 5 or 10 hours to solve.
Okay. Thank you.
Gentlemen, lady, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Council, you have had extensive time to view all the proposals online and had presentations from each of the different law firms, ask questions, And so,
Mayor, can I propose a short 2-minute break?
How many minutes?
2 minutes.
Why don't we make it a little
five
bit
minutes.
Longer? Why don't we make it about a five minute break and,
sure.
then, and then come back? Okay? Thank you. So where we left off, we have seen the presentations of all of the different law firms, and you have had ample time to study their proposals online, ask them questions. So now we're at the point at which someone's going to make a motion. So,
could I ask a procedural question?
Mm-hmm.
To discuss compensation or to make it part of the motion, you know, in the event we have, you know, there's issues in a lot of these proposals that are sort of nebulous as far as fees.
Okay.
Do we have to go into executive session to discuss them or?
No, you can talk about it publicly.
Okay. Thank you.
I thought one of the law firms had requested that the fees not be discussed publicly.
They did. And I asked them in light of the fact that some council members wanted to discuss rates publicly if they were okay, and they said that they are.
Okay.
Okay.
I have one comment to make.
Yes.
I'm not ready to make a motion, but I have a comment. The advice I received from our current attorney I thought was very good. He said, don't just pick the lowest bid. Go for the best lawyer. And then we've seen tonight that most of these firms are willing to negotiate on making sure that we have a retainer that fits our city budget. So I would encourage the council to think about who would best represent us for the various issues that we have and pick that best one.
Thank you, Daniel. And I would just like to say that oftentimes I agree with that advice, that lowest isn't always the best. And you often get, more often than not, you get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to legal fees, I've experienced that in the past. So I would echo those sentiments.
Okay.
So my thought is, attorneys are kind of like buying insurance. You never know quite what you need, but you just know that you need it. And it's hard for us to sit here because we don't know exactly what our needs are going to be for the next year. We don't know what issues are going to face us. We just know that there's probably going to be a lot of them. And given our past history, we're probably going to have a diversity of issues that we're going to have to address. And so to narrow it down to an inexperienced attorney and pay a little bit less versus a more experienced attorney and pay a little bit more, I kind of lean to spending a little bit more because we have the coverage and we have the experience and the knowledge and everything so that we don't have to go out to four or five attorneys with different firms to try to address one or two issues where a larger firm may have a little bit better coverage for us, even though it may be a little bit more upfront. In the long run, it may actually save us money.
And I have a quick comment, too. I agree with what Councilmember Zappala said about it seems like all of the firms are pretty flexible, and I think we need to get the one that's going to give us the best advice. But I don't think we're going to – I think we need to talk through it a little bit. I don't want to go straight to a motion at this point. I think this could be a half-an-hour conversation before I'm comfortable and ready to vote. So since you said I want to entertain a motion, I just didn't feel like that I'm ready for that right now. I'd like
you
to
mean have a discussion between the council members?
Right, as we're sitting here. And
start it off.
Okay. I'll start by saying my feelings about each group.
Can you speak directly in your mic, please?
I will. And because you know, we could go into executive session. I may suggest that for some issues, if I feel like I need to. There's some things that I would love to discuss.
Actually, can I interrupt for just a second?
Yes.
Just to ask kind of a procedure question.
Yeah.
Are there issues? I don't know, David. Maybe you can give us some advice also. Are there issues dealing with these contracts that we need to discuss privately, or should we just discuss everything openly? What? Because a lot of us haven't gone through this particular instance before. Do you know any better? Like, what should we be careful of? What can we address? What should we address?
So
I don't see anything
all
on
all
here.
All of the issues can be discussed publicly unless we've been asked by them to keep something that's proprietary
closed. But if that's been clarified and the firms are okay with that, then that can be brought up in a public meeting. So everything in their proposal that they gave us is available to discuss.
Yes.
Okay.
What we do need to be careful of is some of my opinion as to who might be the best fit for us is based on issues that may be facing the council that are of a legal nature. And we can't discuss any pending litigation unless we go to an executive session.
I would suggest we go and maybe talk for a while, and if we feel like we need to go into executive session, if we're not kind of narrowing on who the right one is that we need further, then I'd suggest we do, because there's some things that I could bring up if it goes a certain way that I couldn't bring up unless it was an executive session that are critical to the matter if we go a certain way.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so I'd say we discuss it and see where it goes.
Yeah, and I would suggest one of the ways we can make progress potentially is if we just go down the line and say who are your top two and why. Mm-hmm. Maybe it turns out we all have a similar top two or a similar top one, and it will make the discussion easier.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Doug Ahlstrom, I actually liked his comments. I thought that he showed a lot of maturity, and he does have a lot of experience. The thing he's weak on is staff, and if we had to go to a lawsuit, he doesn't have the supporting staff that specializes in different things. So he'd be my favorite one to go to personally and just say, hey, what do you think about this? But we do have issues with the city that require a good, strong legal counsel with specialties, and so the only way I would consider going with him is if we went with two and said he's our person that we deal with smaller issues that aren't going to turn into a big legal battle, or once it escalates to a point, then we go to one of the other firms. So if anyone considered that, I would actually vote for that to go with two. But anyway, Peter Sturba, I feel like if we went with him, then a lot of the problems in the past would be exacerbated. I think that there are already negative feelings between the Cedar Hills Citizens for Responsible Government. Even without that in there, then they're my top choice, but that's just me. Smith Hartvigsen, I did like a lot of the things they say. I have some reservations about them that... I do have some reservations about them that I wouldn't bring up in this setting, I'd probably go vote against them also. Heidemann, they seem very litigious. They seem like they aren't really after resolving issues. From my perspective, I want someone, like several attorneys did say, I want to resolve issues so it never gets to litigation, regardless of who it is in the city. And I really like the comments where they said that certain individuals just like to want to be listened to and understood, and some attorneys dig in their feet right off the bat and want to fight, when I think the better way is to try to understand those that have concerns and see if there really is issues that need to be done different ways. So those are kind of comments that I liked. I like that from Ahlstrom, and I also like that from I think Curtin McConkey, David Shaw said that. Curtin McConkey would probably be my first choice if I wouldn't mind doing Ahlstrom and Curtin McConkey for issues that escalate, if that was workable with both groups. McCullough, Nebaker, and Callister, I wasn't extremely impressed with, but they didn't really turn me off in any way either. Curtin McConkey, though, I will say this. Joel, I really like Joel, but I was looking forward to not having someone that lived in Cedar Hills on the council, honestly, because I think that causes some additional problems sometimes. So I would probably only vote for Curtin and McConkey if Joel wasn't on the board there, wasn't involved with it, which would allow him to still be involved in city politics, I would think. I would rather have him be working together as a resident with us. I really like you, Joel. That's nothing against you. It's just I feel like that puts some automatic conflicts of interest into the equation, whether there was any before or not. I think that's having someone on the legal staff that lives in the city introduces conflicts of interest that cannot be avoided just from conversations that happen. And I would probably vote for a combination of Ahlstrom and McConkey with that caveat that that Joel not be on the team. I'm sorry, Joel, but I really like you. This has nothing against you. if it was my wife, I'd say I don't want my wife on the team because she lives in Cedar Hills. Anyway, that's just how I feel. Okay, I'm done.
I think if, first off, all the firms, most of them are left or are gone already, but for the record, I was impressed. I mean, this is a really tough decision for us, for our city, for me personally. You know, it's going to have some implications beyond my time here in this seat. So perhaps, I mean, it could be changed, I guess, as well by a new council. But the thought would be to come up with a firm that works going forward. Long-term relationships seem to work good in these type of things with the attorneys. And as we can all get on the same page and understand where everyone's coming from. So having said that, if I'm going to give you my top two, if that's what we're going to do, it's probably Curt McConkie and Hartvigsen.
What was the second one?
Hartvigsen.
Smith Hartvigsen?
Smith Hartvigsen. And having said that, I like pretty much what I heard from everybody. So, I mean, there are bits and pieces of every attorney, so I think there's good with everything that we heard tonight.
So I would agree a lot with what Rob said. The one thing that I do kind of disagree with or have issue with is I don't understand if we're picking one attorney, why we would want to pick two. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I do disagree with.
Probably just price, because his price is one-third of many of the less.
Yeah, but it's just hard to separate those and say, well, we're going to send this issue to you, this issue to you. Mm-hmm. Where
only ones that escalate, you know what I mean?
If you're going to a large firm, they've got the resources, the manpower, and the capability to answer all of those questions. I realize the price is a little bit less.
I just don't want our budget to be blown. That's what
I might get that, but mm-hmm. It just seems like there would be a lot of gray area and a lot of crossover and getting somebody up to speed if we have to transition from a small attorney and get all that information up, because it's now escalated where we would actually be spending more cost just because we saved a couple of dollars on a few hours here and there. It just, to me, that doesn't seem like a savings, and it doesn't seem like there's any value to that. There's no value added benefit to that.
I really liked him, but I realized he couldn't serve us too. And he was my favorite presenter too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can understand your point. I think it's a good point.
Yeah, and like I said before, I think going to a bigger firm, yes, they may be a little bit more, but we may be able to negotiate a better price also. Mm-hmm. But they do have the capability, the manpower, to resolve pretty much every issue I can see, where if you go to the one-man band, it's kind of like going to the engineers and everything that we interviewed a couple of weeks ago. You talk to the lone guy out there, and he says, well, I can only handle about 5% of what you're going to deal with. Everything else, I've got to go get consultants to come in and help me with this, and I've got to have help with that. And I just see a couple of these guys not being able to do exactly what we need them to do. And I think it's because of their size and maybe their experience, where maybe if they were a little bit bigger and had a few years, maybe they would be a fit for us. But right now, I mean, I definitely see Curt McConkie and – hold on. I actually did like Heidman, so those were kind of my top two.
Okay. Here's my thoughts. Mr. Crawley, I think that your perceived idea of problems in the past is not the result of the past city attorney or any future city attorney. The city attorney only does what they're asked to do. So Mr. Johnson is not responsible for any contention that existed in the past. And no,
I don't think he's running for lawyer here. So
what's
I'm not
that?
Sure. I'm not sure he's not one that's on the agenda. I'm not sure that really is relevant to this. I didn't really bring him up.
You brought up past contention. So all I'm saying is that the city attorney is not responsible for that contention.
Gotcha.
Because whether it is Mr. Wright, who lives in our city, Mr. Johnson, who used to live in our city, or if someone doesn't live in our city, they do what the council asks them to do.
Right. I see how you're correlating that as far as Mr. Wright. I get it now. Okay.
So I think that's how we should look at it. I think we had really good presentations tonight. Really good. Fortunately or unfortunately, I have dealt with a ton of law firms in my life, and done business with half of these firms. And so they're all really good in various different ways. So here I am, and here's why I am where I am, which is that I am tending to go with the groups that are already doing what we're asking them to do. They already represent cities, and they're already familiar with what we would ask them to do. So Sturban Associates is probably my top choice. They already represent cities. They do a really good job of that. And Smith Hartfixson is my next choice. They represent cities. They do a really good they're a diverse firm. And not that Callister Nebaker and McCullough or Curtin and McConkie are not really good firms, but they're about tripling our legal bills. So if you're looking at a firm that's already doing business and has multiple people, Sturban Associates and Smith Hartfixson, our legal bills are going to go up without question, no matter who we go with. But those two firms have great experience with what we're already asking them to do. And so those are my two choices. And one's Sturba, second is Smith Hartfixson. So, Mrs. Reese.
My concern with Mr. Ahlstrom, just going back to Raw, was that I appreciate his honesty, but he made it very clear that he's looking for a full-time job, and if he finds that full-time job, we're out. And that's, I don't think we're in a position right now with everything that's going on to have an attorney that may only be here for a couple of months. So in reviewing my notes, I think my two top preferences are Smith Hartfixson, and I'm butchering that name, mainly because of their experience with municipal law. I like the depth of experience that they have, the clients that they've represented, and the information that they provided on how they would, what they view as administrative, what they view as litigation. My second one is Callister, Nebaker, and McCullough. I have worked with them in the past, and so I'm familiar with their firm. I like that they were the only one that said that they've actually appeared before the State Records Committee and that they prevailed in that. And I think looking at the past 2 years in our city, I think we have to be very aware of the fact that we're going to the State Records Committee. It's not an if, it's a when. And we've been fortunate in prevailing in those instances, and I think we need somebody who can continue that trend, as that's something that continues to be an issue that we face.
Thank you. Mr. Zappala?
So my top two are similar to what we've heard here. In my top two are Smith Hargison, and I'd echo Jenny's reasons, their experience with municipal law, the clients that they've served. I think we'd be well served by having them. I'll also echo what was said earlier. We've received some very good presentations tonight. This is a difficult decision. The other one in my top two is Curt McConkie. I did not expect them to be in the top two as we started tonight. I actually had them going in, ranked as maybe three or four. But I'm convinced that with some of the issues our city is facing and may face, that we need a top shelf firm of attorneys. I don't think they'll necessarily be more expensive than other firms, although their quote for their retainer was higher than others, for a couple reasons. One is they said they'd work with us on it, and the other is it covers unlimited hours. Some of the others have a cheaper retainer, but it covers a limited set of hours, and once we go over, they'll be just as expensive. If you add up their fee, their retainer fee, it comes to around $70,000 for the year, and that is well below what we have spent in the past couple years in attorney fees. And it's just barely above our average. I looked at the last 13 years of our attorney's fees, and it's about average. So I'm not put off by a little bit higher retainer that gets us more and that gets us the deep bench that they have of attorneys in a lot of different specialties. So my top one right now is Curt McConkie. I looked back at the top two that everybody mentioned, and I think four of us mentioned them, and three of us mentioned Smith Hartfixson. So that's where I'm sitting. I'm ready to make a motion, but I'm happy to also have more discussion because I know Rob wants more.
I would want to make a motion also. Can I go with my motion?
I think Mr. Sepulveda said he wanted to make his motion first, so I have to go with his motion first. Okay. And if it passes, great. If it doesn't,
feel free to vote
next.
Feel free to not second it and vote against it.
There we go. Okay.
So I move that we authorize the mayor to enter negotiations and to retain Kurt McConkie as our representative, legal representative.
Can I offer that maybe we add that stipulation that we have no one from Cedar Hills on the legal team? Can we entertain the idea that I brought up that it have no one?
I don't think that's an issue. I've spoken with the Wrights, and I'm really confident. I know Joe well. Mm-hmm. That he has promised that he will put aside his political feelings and serve the city. Mm-hmm. And I am confident that he has the integrity to do that.
Okay. So
that's my motion.
You want to state your motion clearly so that everyone gets it?
Yes. So my motion is that we authorize the mayor to enter into negotiations with Kurt McConkie to serve as our legal representative.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion?
Yes, I would like to have a little bit of discussion. I would like to maybe entertain the idea of, in that negotiation, also having two council members present. This is an issue that really hits our city pretty hard. Legal services is one of the biggest contracts we have. We spend a lot of money on it, and it's something that is going to be a priority for our city in the coming months. So I would just ask in the motion that we have two council members present with that also.
I'll accept that amendment.
Thank you.
Okay. Motion has been seconded. Let's have a roll call vote. Mr. Crawley.
Nay.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Nay.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Motion passes. Congratulations. Thank you. Let's move on. Next is a review action on a resolution amending certain fees to the official fees, bonds, and fines schedule relating to construction plan review, general inspection, gas line inspection, and temporary and permanent power inspection fees. Mr. Mogg.
Yes, Mayor and Council. In consideration that we're negotiating or working towards getting new service provider for our building department in plan review and inspections, staff reviewed the inspection fees and plan check fees that's associated with our current fee schedule and found that they are lower than what it would cost us to actually do the work, and so we're recommending that we adjust that fee schedule to meet the proposed cost to do those inspections and plan review. Currently, our residential plan check fee is 53% of the building permit fee. The ICC recommendation and all of the jurisdictions that I've been able to contact and talk to have all gone with the ICC and the state recommendation of 65%. And so we'd recommend that increase from 53% to 65%. Also, our general inspection fee, which is $47 with an hour minimum.
Can I interrupt you for just a minute on that before you go over that? So on the residential plan check fee, it's 53% of what portion of the building fee? Just the building fee? It's like the calculated valued fee? Is that what we're basing that on?
No, there's a formula that comes through the International Code Council, which basically Cedar Hills has a formula to determine the valuation of the project, not necessarily the tax valuation or the retail valuation.
It's usually a square foot.
Calculated square foot figure comes from, that's adjusted biannually by ICC, the rate per square foot. And then that number is adjusted by the formula of the 1997 Uniform Building Code fee schedule, which is, I've investigated other jurisdictions, they're still using that same formulation. And when we received our RFQs and I discussed with some of these submittals, and that's how they base their fee, is it, well, this is common, it's typical, and that's how they presented their fees as part of their costs. So we was interested in either, well, we would like to just adjust and go with the state and international.
I think, doesn't the state code also allow a secondary provision in that if you do what's generally referred to as a card file plan or plan that's been duplicated, that there's a reduced fee for that?
Cedar Hills has used that, and we still currently are using that. So if a contractor was to have a plan review done on a building and the building next building requested is identical to the past approved plan and there has not been an updated code change, then yes, we've done card file in which we waive the or reduce the rate of the plan check fee. Okay.
Thank you.
We also run into a situation where our current inspection fee is $47, and that will go up to $53 per our contract. And our gas line inspection is currently $35. In order to have that inspected now, it's going to cost $53. And our fee schedule currently does not have a temporary power or a permanent power inspection fee. Those three are all related to requirements from outside providers, Questar and Rocky Mountain Power. So we're requesting that we add those two onto our fee schedule.
Jeff, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So for some of these fees, are these fees that are just passed through? So basically this is what somebody else charges for this to occur?
Essentially these will, as we would be under contract with Sunrise, and that was their hourly rate, is why we're going from $47.30 to $53. That's where that rate came from. So they are pretty much passed through. So staff recommends that council approve the adjustment to the fee schedule to meet these needs.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mogg. You guys have any questions?
So essentially we're adding about, I don't know what the plan check does, but the other one's about 17, 18 plus 6, 25 plus 50. So we're adding about exclusive of the 53 to 65, which I don't know what that does to a fee.
I have some numbers if you'd like them.
On average, a 1,500 square foot house, what is that? How much difference is that?
I don't know on that one. I did a 3,000 square foot home. And the fee adjustments would be $130 per permit. And
including
then
all these factors?
Not including the plan check. No, the plan check fee would be approximately $450 for a total of $580 additional on a 3,000 square foot house.
Wow, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's a big jump, and we're already at the higher end of permits. But I don't know what we do.
Our permits have actually been reduced in the last 2 years. We've had significant reductions in
costs.
Remember,
we recently reduced impact fees based on the Bone and Collins study.
And then we also did a fee adjustment for renewing old permits when people are finishing their basements.
That's
and
they've
been prepaid.
And Mike, can I ask you, since you're more familiar with this than I am, you and Trent, I mean, if they say gas line inspection is $53, is that what everybody charges? Because that's what Questar charges? Or are we really charging more?
That's a good question, because I'm not really clear on the gas line, because usually the gas line can be part of the four-way inspection. But I don't know why. Did Sunrise say this is a separate inspection?
No, it's not. We do a separate temporary power inspection. We do permanent power inspections on request. and gas line inspections on request. And so if we was to, somebody requested that and they came out and did the inspection, it would cost us $53.
Because, like, I don't necessarily ever recall calling a gas line inspection.
I think that's where our problem is, because these are all going to be on request fees for the gas line and temporary power and final power. That's if you come out different than if you do it with a four-way or a final inspection. That would be at a separate time, right?
Currently, these fees are on the permit application at $35 per inspection.
Okay, so we're doing one right now, and I know we didn't call in and get a separate fee for the gasoline inspection. We got the bid from Questar, and they're $450 or whatever to install it.
That's a line extension fee.
Yeah, but there wasn't a separate fee from the city to do that.
I think it's included, and you're saying we, in the past, have not included that? Because I don't know, personally, what the city has ever inspected on a gas line, because
it's buried.
The way it works, you're talking about the external gas line, correct?
No.
The internal gas in the house?
This is the inspection that the city completes in order to give Questar the authorization to make a connection to the meter.
Which usually, as I recall, I mean, the cities I deal with, that's part of the four-way inspection. As long as your gas line plan matches, that's part of the four-way, because it's plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done by an HVAC installer.
Correct, HVAC.
So at that point, it just usually gets called in. So I'm not sure why that's a separate thing. We're talking about an additional $16, I guess, on that one. But
currently,
the principle of it, I just don't understand that.
We do numerous inspections called separately. When we schedule the inspection, you can schedule a four-way. That does not include a shear inspection. We do that separately, but typically we do it at the same time as a four-way. The gas inspection, we typically do at the same time as a four-way, but they are all separate inspections. Each one of those is a separate inspection, and currently we do have fees for some
of those. So right now we are including the $35 when you pull a permit, though.
Except we're not doing it on temp power or permanent power.
Correct.
So if you have a temp pedestal out there, and we call for that at the time we're digging the house, for instance, currently you would inspect it, but we're not getting reimbursed for that, essentially, is what you're saying? It's just
exactly. We are providing an inspection at no fee.
Other than the fact that they're there already for something else, I suppose.
Sometimes,
yeah. But it could be called in as a separate item. There's no doubt about that.
Temporary power typically is separate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's even before you dig your home.
So how much of that 65% on the plan check, that goes up? That's the biggest chunk of it.
It is.
How much does that goes to Sunrise for that?
Their agreement is they would receive 65% of the 65%, leaving us 35% to do the in-house and filing, storage, et cetera.
Fairly big jump.
But yeah, it is.
Well, make a motion then.
I'm not sure what to make a motion on.
if you don't like this, the recommendation from staff, then change it.
No, I'm just trying to think through it.
Yeah, me too. For a minute. Hang on.
Okay.
You know, obviously it affects me. I mean, I'm a builder.
It'll affect everybody that builds here. I mean, it is a fixed cost, and it's an increase.
Now, when we voted for, was it Sunrise? Is that right? When we voted for Sunrise, did we know the rates that they were giving us?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It was in there.
It was in there. So, I guess that was a natural consequence of that decision.
Well, their rates were in there. We didn't know what our rates were compared to what theirs were. So we're seeing the difference in that increase from what we were currently charging to what they were. Mm-hmm. Now, in their contract, they did say that there was a 65%.
Building
permit fee.
And that was when that spreadsheet was presented, that was why the cost increase was significant, is because of the plan review.
I mean, everyone else had it lumped as, I think there were more lump sum numbers.
David, do you know how much this affects us, this change as far as our revenue? How much revenue we'd get if we left it how it is versus if we go with the new rates? How much will it affect us?
Well, like Jeff mentioned, this is a pass-through, right? So right. When Sunrise comes to do the inspection, if we don't adjust this fee,
then we pay for it.
So we subsidize the inspections.
But I'm just wondering what kind of volume we have to. Yeah. I mean, is this going to increase our revenues by $1,000 a year or $20,000 a year? What are we closer to?
It wouldn't increase revenues really at all. There's a corresponding expense for the revenue coming in.
But we could just pay the extra fee and not charge the extra fee. We could do that. So I'm just wondering what would be the difference.
That wouldn't add to our revenue. That would add to our expenses.
I just want to know that amount.
We're now subsidizing.
How many homes are we building
or how many connections do we make a month?
So we probably have 12 new homes.
I think last year we did 20.
Oh, so 20. Yeah.
Counting the fourplex and the eightplex.
We're talking a couple hundred dollars a month is, we're increased in fees because we're going up by $10, $20 times 12. It's about $250 a month. That's the decision.
More than that, right?
Okay. Right, yes.
Because you...
600 times 20.
Yeah, on a 3,000 square foot, $600 increase.
Yeah.
Now, commercial is already at 65%.
Oh, it is?
Yes. That is the standard.
I was just looking at the dollar amount of all the different fees that are changing. Most of the fees that are changing $20 here, $10 there. And so I was saying, but you're saying that we have 20.
The plan check fee is a big percentage fee.
It's only percentage, but when you calculate it out, it's hundreds of dollars.
But on a house at $600, multiply that by 20, I mean, that's $12,000.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to get is what is this total amount of this change that we're talking about?
Does it affect multifamily different, or are they under the residential?
No, it would just be the calculation of the valuation of the project.
Did it say single family or just residential?
So in the last year and a half, our typical plan total permit cost has dropped about $3,000
to $3,500
less in the last 18 months.
But that's impact fees mostly.
Correct.
So if I ever understand what you're saying, though, is that these proposed increases are just to cover our costs.
Correct.
And I don't know how we don't cover our costs. That doesn't seem fair to every other resident who ends up subsidizing it if we don't.
That's why we're proposing it, just trying to stay even.
Well, based on that, as a builder, and as much as I don't want to increase fees on myself, I will motion to approve Resolution 4-21-2015A, a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to official fees, bonds, and fine schedule of the City of Cedar Hills.
I can second that.
I have a motion that's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
I believe it's a resolution. It has to be roll call.
Yes. Roll call.
Okay, even though it was unanimous, we can do that. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Augustus?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Again, motion was unanimous. Let's move on.
Thank you.
Item number 11, action item on a resolution adopting the municipal wastewater planning program. Are you going to do that, Mr. Mogg?
Yes.
Okay.
State Division of Environmental Quality requires that the city submit an annual report on our municipal wastewater planning program, specifically on our collection systems and our financial evaluation. We've created that report. It was included in your information packet. This is the report where zeros are good and high numbers are bad. We did well. We had no overflows, no basements flooded, no spillage of sewage anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we had a good year. The only thing that we get points for is our financial methods, and I think we discussed this last year, and that we do not use a sinking fund type of funding for our sewer projects, and that's okay. I mean, but that's where the points have come from. And so part of the requirements is that we send the state needs council to acknowledge that they've reviewed the report and that they're in line with our funding. And so staff is recommending that you so do that.
Can you remind me what a sinking fund is?
Well, I'm not an accountant, but...
Or maybe so, David can.
When we fully depreciate an asset, like a utility, and we use a sinking fund, we take the depreciation and dedicate that to a fund. So we have cash on hand to fully replace our system. So...
And we're not doing that.
We're not fully funding with a dedicated account.
Does that worry you? Or you say no because we have funding somewhere else?
There are different ways to look at that. It does not worry me right now. So, I would recommend that we continue on the way we are.
You guys have any questions for Mr. Mogg?
I can make a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that we approve Resolution 421-215B, a resolution adopting the 2014 Municipal Wastewater Planning Program.
Okay.
I'll second.
I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? This is not a monetary action, so we can do a...
That's a resolution.
It's a resolution. Okay. So... I have a motion that's been seconded. We'll have a roll call vote. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Augustus?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. It's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 12, action item authorizing a structure lease agreement with Vivint Wireless to include providing internet services. Mr. Goodwin.
We've been scrambling with Vivint to try to get this ready for tonight. So I hope you all remember the discussion that we had regarding this potential lease agreement that we had from last Tuesday night. We have a new structural lease agreement with Vivint that's being proposed. And I just wanted to go over some changes. I don't think you've had a chance to see it, but I just wanted to go over every change in the contract that we discussed from last week and show you that it's what's been changed in the contract. One of the concerns was the amount of square footage that Vivint was requiring or requesting. Previously it said 200 square feet. We had discussed 50 to 100. We've changed the new agreement to read 100 square feet of space on the rooftop. Another concern that Jeff Mogg brought up was that they would need to get a building permit. There's a sentence in the agreement under permitted uses that the tenant agrees to comply with all applicable governmental laws, rules, statutes, regulations. We would require them to get a building permit through his department, and also the tenant has the right to modify, supplement, replace, or upgrade the equipment, and it has the statute there that discusses with landlord approval. So any modifications to the proposal would need to go through staff and possibly through the council, depending on the gravity of that. We changed under the term to go from the fifth, which was the previous term agreement, to the fourth anniversary of the effective date, making the agreement renewable every 4 years. Under the rent, and this was an item that came up for a couple of reasons, they added a clause that reads, tenant will make its best effort to provide internet speeds of 50 megabytes per second up and 50 megabytes per second down to landlord at both locations. So while it's not a guarantee of service, it is an expectation that we will provide. We also had a short discussion regarding rent on the premise, and they have offered us $100 a month in annual payments made of just $1,200 once a year. Termination. There is a clause that was added that reads, this agreement may be terminated without penalty or further liability by landlord at the end of any term with cause if tenant is in breach of any terms set forth in this agreement. Also, there is the issue of damage to the premise, damage to the building. They do have an insurance policy in the amount of $3 million to correct any damage, and also later in the agreement, it does state that upon termination of this agreement, tenant will remove all of tenant's above ground improvements, and tenant will, to the extent reasonable, restore the premise to its condition at the commencement of the agreement. So we feel safe. We feel sure that our infrastructure will be kept safe. Another issue was the access. Tenant would require access to the interior of the structure. If the tenant requires access to the interior of the structure after business hours, tenant will pay landlord landlord's agent time and a half for escorting tenant into the structure. So if they need to come into the building anytime we're closed or we're not here, they will cover those costs for the city, so we're not having to front that.
And they're going to do that prior to them actually going up there, because my worry is that they just show up in the middle of the night, throw a ladder up.
Yes.
So they will notify us. So that
we will have someone on staff here. They will not just be coming into the building. We will have someone on staff here escorting them.
Okay.
Those were the major changes.
Is that both inside the building and out? So if they just want to throw up a ladder and get on the roof?
It's inside the building. And part of that is because many times they probably wouldn't need to get inside the building. But we could probably adjust that to be any time you need to get on the premise. So I think that's probably not a bad recommendation to make to them.
And that was actually my concern from before, is just I don't want them showing up in the middle of the night throwing a ladder on our building and all of a sudden somebody's up there and us not know it.
You're going to get a resident calling and saying, hey, somebody's getting on top of our building.
So where it reads, if tenant requires access to the interior of the structure after business hours, we can have them alter that language to say, if tenant requires access to the structure, rather just so just strike out the
or say interior clause. And exterior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's a reasonable request to make.
Okay. Well, if that's it, I would like to thank you for going back and doing that. I know we made a lot of requests.
Can I go over one more thing, just real quick? There's concern about the exterior, what the building would look like. And previously we had a tower here and a tower right there, and we were concerned because you could view it from the gazebo when you look back. What we did is we got up there with the pole, and we had Greg out here at the gazebo looking up, taking some photos, and where we've positioned it, you can see about 3 inches of the pole, so you can probably see the very tippy top of a dish. So it's slightly visible, but past that, it just wouldn't work. And then the rest of their equipment would be further on the northern side of the building over by the pro shop, where it wouldn't be visible at all from this area over here.
I've got a question. So I sent an email from my friend who's kind of an expert in this field. He builds cell phone towers and also towers for these type of structures. He felt that we could go back and get $500 and they would still do it. He said the high end is $700 or $800 a month, but they'll pay $500 plus free internet. I might have sent that after you'd already talked about the $100 fee. I don't know. Did you get that before? How'd that discussion go with them?
That email came in after. We really met with Vivint on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday morning. It was like the next day they agreed to come out and go through.
Did they give us any ultimatums, like say if we go higher than that, they're not going to do it or anything like that?
I wouldn't say it was an ultimatum, but they did let us know that we're not the only game in town with the view. They have an employee who lives over here in Juniper Heights that has a fantastic view of the valley, who is willing to lend him his property. Mm-hmm. So that would be my only concern is, where internet service here is spotty.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been on my computer and I've had some issues tonight. I don't know how many of you have as well, but
multiple.
It'd be nice to have some of that resolved.
Would a resident be able to do that without getting permission from the council?
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's no zoning laws that say that they can't put a tower in their yard.
It's not a tower. It's just a couple dishes on their house.
Oh, well, a couple dishes is different than 10. So
we don't require council approval for a DirecTV setup.
Right.
I mean, they can put a dish on their house.
No, I was thinking that you were saying that they'd have something comparable.
If it was a full tower,
right.
There is city code regarding a telecommunications tower.
That's
but where
I'm
it's
saying.
A few dishes relaying a signal, I wouldn't say that's
want to make a motion on this.
Okay.
I have a few more things that I need to go over on the contract because I took copious notes last time.
Okay.
He said that he wants to make a motion. There is still time for discussion.
Yes.
So okay. I just want to make sure I have time for that.
So Mr. Crowley, go ahead and make your motion.
My motion would be to approve the proposed structure lease agreement with Vivint with the stipulation that they go from $100 to $300 because that's the motion. The reason I'm saying that is because the expert that I talked to felt that they'd go to 500. If you go higher than that, you might risk them walking away, considering what they're putting there. If we went 300, I think it's pretty safe to say, with already it being approved by the council, that they would just say, $200 a month, we'll do it. I think that we'd just get an extra $2,400 a year, and I don't think we'd lose the contract.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
There is no second, Mr. Crowley. Mr. Zappala, go ahead.
On Section 70, we had talked about striking the term surrounding property.
We did.
And did we?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't go over that one. That one is gone. It just says city's property. Let me read that to you. 70, I only have a small note here. It says, for the purposes of this agreement, interference may include but is not limited to any use on the property that causes electronic or physical obstruction with or degradation of the communication signal from the wireless communication facility. Surrounding property is gone.
Good. And then we'd also talked about installation on a skid and not a permanent anchor.
Yeah. Let me go over that. Their new plans, which they sent to us before they had them inked, they had showed them being bolted into a wall. The new plans that they've submitted to us, I can just show these to you. They're on a skid that can be anchored by a cinder block. So there's no damage to the building as far as anchoring it to the building itself.
Okay, so I can make a motion now.
Okay, so go ahead and make your motion.
So I move that we approve the contract with Vivint as described to us tonight, with the change that we're going to require that they get permission from us to require both access to both the interior and exterior, as we've discussed.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
The motion's been seconded. Any further discussion? From my right, Mr. Crowley.
Nay.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Moving on now to item number 13, action item, authorizing a police service agreement with American Fork City to provide law enforcement and animal control services. Mr. Bunker.
Mayor and Council, before you have a proposed police services agreement from the American Fork Police Department. And I just wanted to go through a few changes from our current contract. This proposed contract suggests that we go to a two-year term instead of a year-to-year term. In this two-year term, the police department is proposing that there is only one increase, one 3.5% increase versus annually. And that there would be a 180-day clause to exit the contract versus 60 in the old contract, and that contract would renew every 24 months. And we did send this over to our attorney, Eric Johnson, and he has a few comments. So in paragraph 2.1, he just wanted to make sure that it's clarified that this amount is for 2 years. It does say for the fiscal years of 2016 and 2017, but maybe we put a little note in there for the 24-month period.
When does it actually start? Are we starting it now?
July 1 of 2015. So we would start now for the fiscal year of 2016, which starts July 1, and then it would run until June 30 of 2016, which is the beginning of the 2017.
And
it's 2 years.
The escalator clause is at the end of the first year then?
It's at the beginning of the first renewal period. So we would pay the 3.5% now, and then next July we would have zero increase in our budget of next year.
And historically, what have we done? It's been higher than that,
correct? It's been 3.5 annually, every year.
Every year.
So this proposal is, hey, we want a longer contract. It provides stability to the police department. It adds benefit to them.
No,
and in return for that, they're saying, we're not going to give you a 3.5% every year. It'll be 3.5% every other year.
What is that,
3.5%? So I think, if I'm understanding correctly, if it starts July 1 of 2015, it would go to July 1st of 2017 for 2 years.
June 30 of 2016, because the 2017 budget starts in 2016.
But he's talking calendar, just straight calendar.
Fiscal.
It starts this year.
It starts this year.
Yes.
Right. So it would July go 1. To June 30th of 2017.
2016 because July 1 of 2016 starts our 20. That's right. You're right, because that's even I get confused on fiscal years.
It's been a long night.
Yes, because that would start the beginning of our 2017
right.
contract period.
Okay.
Correct.
Just wanted
yes.
to make sure we were clear with Mod.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay. Sorry, didn't mean to.
And so the suggestion from our attorney in Section 2.1 is just to clarify with some language saying this is for a two-year period. It does say for the years of, for the fiscal years of 2016 and 2017.
So is he recommending we put the actual start and end dates in there?
It actually is in there in the next section,
yeah,
3.1.
3.1 says
it's in there. And again, his suggestion is in 3.1 that we clarify the renewal period is every 24 months.
Well, it says that already in that.
Yeah, and it's in there. His
so
suggestion
I get that.
Is
so I guess what is the
sure.
suggestion for 2.1 then? I'm not following what he wants to change in 2.1.
2.1, he suggests that he said it may be fine as it is, but it may be better to clarify whether the City of Cedar Hills is paying $801,535 each year or for the 2 years combined. And it's for the 2 years combined because it says we would pay that amount for the fiscal years of 2016 and 2017. So just clarify that that's for both years.
So what if we just add the dates to the end of 2017 and say from the dates of and just list the start date and the end date?
Perfect.
Because I think that's a lot clearer instead of using fiscal terms. Because let's say for whatever reason a resident decided to go back and read this, they're not going to have any idea.
Perfect.
So
our
I think
fiscal year goes from July 1 to July 1.
If we can't even understand it, our residents aren't going to understand it.
Good point. Residents, it could be residents read our contracts all the time.
I know. That's what I'm saying. If they happen to read it, I don't know that they would understand what that meant. So I think having dates in there.
So I didn't go back to the budget, but the 800 is 2 years worth, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. And that includes 3.5%.
So that's about a $14,000 savings of approximately if we were to do 3.5.
One time versus two. Yes. Yes.
So okay. I think we get amazing service from American Fork Police Department. And with that, I'd like to make a motion.
Please go ahead.
I move that we approve the proposed police services agreement with the American Fork Police Department with the one change that was suggested tonight.
I'll second.
Motion
Sorry,
has been
David.
I had one other thing.
Go ahead.
I wasn't quite done yet. Mm-hmm. One last item. The Eric Johnson said, there has been discussion in the past. Right now, prosecution services are provided through American Fork. And this would be the time if the city was considering taking our own prosecution and paying for that ourselves and hiring our own prosecution, that possibly that would be in this contract.
How much is it per month that we pay for prosecution?
Right around $2,500 a month.
Okay.
Now,
$30,000 a year.
I don't know what that does for American Fork. And We haven't talked to them. I have talked to their city manager about the prosecution. And so that prosecution is handled through the police department, but it's the same prosecutors that they have handling their prosecution. So it's all congruent. Our prosecutors is the same as American Fork.
So it makes sense that we probably get a better rate by doing that instead of going to someone separate.
Potentially. Or we negotiate. We can negotiate that as a city. So that's just one of the things that Eric brought up is.
Is Eric saying that approximately the money that we spend, isn't it on a per
needed, case basis?
Per case basis.
Yeah,
so.
We only pay for what we for yeah. the services we use.
So I don't see how there'd be really any savings.
It's going to be negligible, I would think.
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of something that we prosecute?
Crime in our city.
Crimes, traffic.
Yeah, usually it's. Let's say that there's vandalism and we catch somebody and the prosecution decides to go ahead and prosecute that.
There we go.
Then
right.
that attorney would represent
the
American Fork Police Department.
What would you say are two or three most common things are that
come that's definitely one. You know, if we theft or burglary, something like that might be another that they catch.
Okay, well, I'm just going to reiterate my motion.
Perfect.
I move that we approve the proposed police services agreement with the American Fork Police Department with the changes that Mr. Augusta suggested as far as indicating the exact dates.
And I'll re-second,
okay.
I guess.
I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's go from my left. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Lieutenant Lydier, if you would thank Chief Call and all the officers for what they do for us.
And thank you yourself for being here.
Okay, so I have a suggestion. We can go into exec session, or if you guys want to handle a quick discussion on pressurized irrigation water restrictions now, then we don't have to discuss that when we come out. That sound reasonable to everybody? Okay. So Mr. Crowley wanted to have a discussion on water restrictions and rationing and all this stuff, and this is a good discussion to be having this year in light of our water situation. And so I spoke with Mr. Bunker on Monday morning about this, and so I am not opposed at all to implementing restrictions immediately. And so I listened to the governor's press conference on Sunday, and they're talking about water, and he said that he would be surprised if cities didn't quickly implement restrictions based on the snowpack that we have up in the mountains. And we have about 65% of normal water in reservoirs. So obviously it was not a banner year for snow in the mountains. So in the past, we have tried rationing by odd even. We have tried rationing by zones. None of them were particularly successful. But if we can figure out a way of doing it better this year, I'm okay with that. And so this is the discussion to be had. Do we put water restrictions in place, and do we do that right away? So
can you want to say something?
Yes. Go ahead.
So I was looking at Rob's plan, and I guess my concern with Rob's plan was that it would be the same throughout the whole year, but we know that the suggested watering amount changes during the year. Like right now, it might be just one day a week on a normal spring. And so I wonder if we're going to do some kind of restriction, I'm not even sure they would work, if we might say, you know what, it's only one day a week that you're supposed to do it this year, and so half the city or odd addresses, wherever we're going to do that, can water only on Monday, and the other half only does it on Friday. There should be no watering any other day, period, and that would be really easy to enforce. I'm just looking for something easy to enforce here. And then as the season goes on, we could say, well, it's 2 days now, and so this part of the city gets Monday and Thursday, and so the part gets Tuesday and Friday, and you might actually have to change it multiple times during the year. That's hard to communicate to residents, but it's easy to enforce. Love to hear what everybody else has to say.
The hard thing is the complication of it, and you know, if it's always changing, I think that people would adhere to it better if it was the same all year round. But then you will use more water. You'll use more water during the times when our system isn't struggling as much. So maybe we do that in future years. But I think to start with, we might want it to be simple, and our system isn't struggling nearly as much during those times when you're talking about having it be more restrictive. So it'd be more restrictive during the times when we aren't having an issue with water, and less restrictive when we are having an issue. I think it would make more sense to have it be consistent all throughout the year. And maybe as we get more sophisticated with the program, maybe we can help people in future years learn that. But I think the hardest part is getting people to understand it and do it. So that would be the argument against it. I don't know if I'm not totally against that idea, Daniel. I just think that it may take a year before we could do that and have it catch on.
Can I weigh in this for just a minute?
You bet.
So my opinion on this is arbitrary restrictions become ignored unless there's some kind of enforcement. And right. I'd like to ask David, do we have the staff to enforce any kind of restrictions?
Yeah. There is not a perfect situation here, Mike, in that if we have restrictions and we don't have strong enforcement, then there are people that are going to violate that. Now, Mr. Augustus is going to say that that the watering system, odds and evens, will not work. He's right. Because you're supposed to water about every third day.
Yeah.
And so if you're watering
every other day, you may actually be overwatering. And so,
but that's but that's something that is so hard to educate. I mean,
that's why I'm
good example. I haven't even turned my water on for the year, right? My lawn's brown. I don't care. It's too early to get it green for me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So there is not a perfect situation
there
here.
And I don't know what we do.
And maybe we do every third day. I'm okay with that. Even though I said every other day, I'm really just thinking we need to do something.
That's a hard thing to set up.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, it's unenforceable because it's going to change every week. It's going to be Monday, Thursday, and then
I think
Monday.
It has to be the same day every week. I mean, I'd say twice. We go through twice a week and three times a week.
But
twice
how can you do that?
Work.
Every week would differ.
No, because
every week has to be different. If you do every third day, you cannot do the same day every week and make it work. You cannot do it.
Yeah, because you go Monday, Thursday, Sunday, and then
if you just say twice a week, Monday and Thursday.
I don't think twice a week is going to work for some people. They just have
your yard won't last twice a week.
Yeah. So it's got to be three times a week.
Yeah, and you can't do it. Mm-hmm. So what the mayor said is exactly right. That's exactly what I would have said. Mm-hmm. Going to Mike's comment, though, the problem we've got is let's say we do put restrictions in place. Mm-hmm. They mean absolutely zero unless we enforce them. I don't care what the restrictions are. If you put them in place and don't enforce them, nobody will listen to them, and we're right back with the exact same problem.
I think there's a lot of people that really care and realize that it's becoming more of an issue.
But those people that care aren't going to care whether restrictions are in place or not. They're going to care because they want to care.
They're self-policing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they self-police themselves. They don't care what the restrictions are. Wow. They're doing it because they've heard that we have water problems, and they're conscious about their actions.
So who's going to care? And I mentioned this in a post. Are the people that the neighbors that are following it are going to get ticked at their neighbors that aren't following it? And I suggest that the enforcement happen with neighbors reporting, and then someone. What I would do is say.
But that's great.
We need a neighborhood watch program. You call into the city, and the city will call and say, "Sir, I've heard that you're overwatering at the wrong times. Is this true?"
That's our problem.
Like, who told you that? Like,
no, we wouldn't say that.
But that's going to be the response.
It's a he said, she said.
There'll be some neighborhood fights.
We're still getting way ahead of where we need to be. Huh. We don't even know if we have the personnel to do that, because it's great to say, hey, let's have your neighbors call in and complain about you. Mm-hmm. But let's say we get 30 or 40 calls a day on that, because we've got 2,500 homes very easily.
Do you think
easily,
we'd get that much?
I bet very easily we could.
Well, then there's no way.
Because I know half my neighborhood would call right now, because we've got a half dozen residents in my side that have watered every day since last Wednesday.
But there's no restrictions. That's, you know, if there was, they might stop.
But my point is, do we have the staff to answer 40 phone calls, make the phone calls, and take action?
I'll tell you
after
what.
That?
I will follow up on five or three or four per day personally.
No, so it doesn't work that way.
If we're going to do restrictions, which I'm not opposed to either, especially if residents want them, I think we as a council need to look at the budget and find out where we're going to hire people to work at night, to drive around the city, and look for offenders. That's the only option, is to hire additional staff, because most watering is done in the evening.
Right.
Neighbors aren't looking out who's watering at 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. I'm asleep anyway. I think most people are. So you've got to hire staff that is going to go through the city and enforce it.
I don't think we can put restrictions in place until we do that.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think that having the rules, I mean, that's like me saying, oh, I know my kids are going to hit, so I'm not going to set any rules that they can't hit each other. I know they're going to break that rule sometimes. I think people want to know what's expected, and at least saying, here's what is expected in the city, here's what we expect, whether we enforce it or not, will change some behavior. And a lot of people in our city are saying, we want restrictions, tell us what we need to do.
Well, we have been doing that for years.
But we're not more water.
But we're not really, I mean, we're giving them an unreasonable number that's one-third of what we're using, that's saying, here's what the state's saying we have to do. No one's buying into that number. I'm not buying into it. I can't water my lawn and keep agreeing with that number. That's one-third of what the city's using. I think we just need to suggest something that will improve it, and we get a little bit better each year. I don't think we have to enforce it during the slow the watering times of the year that we don't have a water issue, which is all except for July and August.
I disagree with that.
I don't think we have to tell everyone that, but I think that we really enforce it for 2 months. Otherwise, we're spending money to not save any money.
To me, that's no different than saying, we can just cancel our contract with the American Heart Police because we're going to have these laws, but we're not going to enforce them. So go ahead and break it into your neighbor's house. No one's watching. No one's going to care.
Okay, so if there was no law that said you can't do that?
But we've already told our residents what we expect. We expect them to follow the state watering guidelines, which is not even looking at the numbers, just saying in April, no irrigation. In May, every fifth day. In June, every third day. In July, every third day. Whatever the case is, we've given them that information year after year after year. It's just not being followed.
I have a really good solution that will police water uses by residents 24 hours a day.
Water metering.
Which is a meter.
Daniel with a little plastic badge.
No, he's like a water meter.
It's a water meter, and it measures exactly how much you use. And if you go over a certain amount, we raise your rates, and you're going to get a big bill, and you're going to quit doing it.
And if we had a grant for $2 million, that would be awesome.
So I agree with Trent, which is I'm fine with restrictions. I just think we have to hire the staff to enforce it. And then
money, except for in July and August, to enforce.
But the problem is, can't just enforce it during July and August, because the amount of water we're using now affects the amount of water that we have available in July and August, and it affects the water that we have at the end of the year and next year.
Well, and frankly, I think it's unfair for the people who are saying, okay, I'm only supposed to water on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and yet my neighbor is taking advantage and watering every day, and you're not doing anything about it. You're not ticketing them. They're getting away with it. How is that fair for me? So I'm just going to start doing whatever I want to.
And it's a snowball effect,
and
we have that exact
call in
problem
during June and July.
Okay, but I don't think we should be like the Gestapo and go out there and. I think it should be a friendly phone call that we don't have to have like five people going around with badges around. I think it's a friendly phone call and say, hey, your neighbor said that you're overwatering, or we've noticed that you're overwatering, whatever we want to say.
So what do you do the second time, offense,
and say,
and then the third offense?
And say, the first time, say, are you aware that
but
you're
my
not
point
following
is we
the
don't
rules?
Know
and
if
say,
we have the staff to do that right now.
And if somebody calls in and says, my neighbor is overwatering, and they call and say, we heard you're overwatering, and they say, no, I'm not. Then what? It's a he said, she
said. If they
say,
no, I'm not, that's the only time I'd send someone out. Because people have their things on, their sprinkler systems on timers. If I'd say to the neighbor, what times are they watering, we'll come and check it out.
And we have to have the staff to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and check
that. But I think most people will say, oh, yeah, you're right. I need to change that. Will you change that? We're going to follow up on you. I think we'd get 90% of the people
and
to do
that. And we have to have the staff to do that.
To answer the phones.
Yes.
But it's not like five people that are going to be driving around at midnight. I think most of it will be done over the phone because I think we have good residents.
And we have to have the staff to make the phone calls and do the follow-up.
But most people are watering in the middle of the night, and so their neighbors aren't even aware because most people aren't awake at 2 to 5 in the morning.
Do you guys know which neighbors are overwatering?
I do not because I'm not awake at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Someone was telling me that
I do because he waters at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Well, someone said early on the conversation, everybody knows this person's watering every day. I know which neighbors of mine are overwatering and breaking what I think the rule should be. But there's no rule saying they can't, so why can I can't even say anything to them.
Rob, the right answer is every single person in the city is overwatering. I thought I wasn't overwatering until I got a meter on my house, and now I know I'm overwatering. But before that, I thought, I'm doing great. I set my timer to exactly the way the state recommended it, and I'm still using way more than I was supposed to.
Okay, so can I ask you a question about that? So if you pulled your watering back to what the state recommended level is, would you be able to water your yard efficiently and keep it green? Have you tried?
Yes, provided I actually fix some of my sprinklers, which are not working very well.
So
but because they weren't giving good coverage, I have to overwater in order to make sure I get enough water so my lawn doesn't die. And I have fixed the front, but I haven't fixed the back yet.
See, and that's my problem, is that how many residents are going to be exactly like that, saying, you know what, my sprinklers don't quite cover it because my builder put in a crappy system and I don't get good coverage, but in order to fix it, it's going to be $5,000. So how do we stop that? Because you're a prime example of that. I mean, I know you're conscientious about your watering and that you watch it. And I'm sure we've got residents out there that are exactly the same, but we've also got a lot that are kind of in between. And how do we say you can't overwater and...
You charge them the appropriate amount, and then they get incentivized. Because I would have fixed it last year if I had a bill.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no incentive to do it right now.
So let me ask a couple of questions. I think we're all in agreement that water is a precious commodity, particularly this year. And we have a 75% reduction of our usage coming out of American Fort Canyon starting immediately. So we can do nothing and hope that we get some rainfall in July or August. It's not a real strategy. We can do that.
or we can talk about some sort of rationing. And that can be a difficult way of doing that is telling residents water every 3 days. That means they've got to be really proactive in terms of monitoring their sprinkling system. Some of them won't do that because essentially what they do is turn on their sprinkler in the spring, they turn it off in the fall, and that's the way it goes. So if you ask them to do what the state is saying, which is every 3 days, I'm okay with that. We're asking the residents to do a lot, and some of them are going to be totally confused about how to configure their sprinkling system. We could do an odd-even system and have Saturday be no watering except for sprinkle by hand and let that be a replenishing day. That's not a perfect system either, but this is a year where I feel like we should do something.
We've also
even if it's not perfect, doing something may be better than doing nothing.
So what you're proposing is, I kind of like the idea of, you know, in the past it's just we try to educate, it doesn't work. But if we actually say we have a voluntary every other day with no real enforcement, are you saying that perhaps would get residents, like we say we have restrictions every other day?
I think we should have fines attached, and if we don't have the staff, we won't be able to catch all of them, but catch some of them, just put a little bit of fear in people, they might get caught.
Hey, David, do we have the manpower to even catch any of them right now?
You know, I can answer that no. I mean, we don't really. I mean, so staff's out in the city every day, and they may catch a person here or there.
Right. But that's my point, though.
Yeah. So, but
that's like policemen and speeding tickets.
So again, one option is doing nothing, realizing we don't have staff to enforce it, or we can try some voluntary restrictions. I'm not optimistic that it's going to be terribly successful, but at the same time, it's an effort to try and do something. I think that Daniel's correct that in the long run, I don't see how we in every other city in Cedar in Utah doesn't meter. It's just, I think that's where you're going. In the meantime, we have the potential for a really dry summer, so hoping for the best is maybe not a strategy. I'm sorry, Mrs. Reese, go ahead.
Can I read what Pleasant Grove has on their website?
Yes.
So they say, the city will start to pressurize the secondary water system about April 15th. Everyone is being asked to wait until May 1st to start watering. Here is our watering schedule. Due to the ongoing drought, you will continue this year with a watering schedule. If your house number is odd, your watering days are Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If your house number is even, your watering days are Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. We will be monitoring water usage for non-compliance to watering days and wasting water again this year. Compliance officers will be working around the clock.
Yeah.
And I think that's we'd have to do the same thing. We would have to have compliance officers working around the clock to make sure that those restrictions are being followed.
And I would, I mean, if I was going to do this kind of a plan, I would really do it following the state watering guidelines. So I would not do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday to start with.
I wouldn't either.
I would start off with Monday, Friday, and another part of the town is Tuesday, Saturday.
I would.
And then I'd change
twice a week.
I want to see
twice a week because that's what the state says you need. And then I would move it as needed.
See, but the other problem we've got,
it's only going to be maybe one or two changes during the year. And so you make a big announcement, hey, we've changed the watering restrictions. It's now on these days.
See, the other problem we've got, though, is we do have a lot of residents that do have fairly steep yards that if they do it twice a week, their lawns are dead. Because with the slope of their lawn, they cannot water for 20 minutes per zone because it doesn't get deep enough into the ground and everything's just running right off the surface. So at the same time, we also have to be conscious of the varying landscapes and the terrain that we've got because Cedar Hills sits in a weird area where we've got some areas that have a lot of sand, we've got steep hillsides, we've got clay, we've got rock. So as much as I would love to say, yeah, we've got to do every third day or whatever it is, I don't know how we quite do that either.
I just want to see improvement this year.
Can you speak up a little bit louder?
Yeah, I would like to see improvement every year. I don't think we have to go straight to the state watering guidelines and use one-third of our water supply.
I agree.
I want to see improvement where we're using 75% of our water supply instead of 30% of it.
Yeah, the problem is if we go to Monday, Wednesday, Friday, type restrictions like Pleasant Grove here, we will use more water. We will not cut back.
I disagree with that.
Because it happened last time.
Here's why I did that last time, though, and I'll tell you. I even watered more when I heard that. Here's how it was announced, if I remember right. We have real water problems. We have, you know, so it was someone tried to justify it in the city newsletter saying how dire of a situation it is, and we could run out of water, and restrictions are going to start next week. And I thought, wow, I've got to water quickly because my grass, I hadn't even turned my sprinklers on at that point. I went and turned my sprinklers on and thought, the water might run out next week. I've got to water quickly. And that was me. I wasn't involved in any politics at that time, but I remember thinking, I've got to turn my water on quick and get things going quickly because we're going to run out of water. If we house it like this and say, we have a lot of water in the city that we can use, but we need to be environmentally conscious, we need to conserve, we need to improve, we're all using too much water. We're not going to run out of water, especially if everyone works together and follows these guidelines.
So you made a good point, and our Water Conservation Committee said that they didn't think it was possible to go in 1 year from where we are to where the state recommends. I think everybody gets that. So if you could do, you know, 20% a year for 3 years, you're in the ballpark. But right now, we're not even in the ballpark. And so, so again, we can do nothing this year and hope for the best. I don't think that's a very good idea. We can try restrictions, knowing that it's not perfect, and we don't really have a great ability to enforce those, but have some faith in our residents that they will do the right thing. Past has shown that they, in terms of cutting back on water, they haven't bought into that yet, but I've been talking about this for over a year and talking about it a lot. So it's up to you guys. I mean, this is just a discussion item tonight, but I would suggest that if this becomes an action item, if you want it to, we don't put it off too long. We bring it back in the first meeting in May and be prepared to talk about what we can do. Not what we want to do, because maybe what we want to do is not possible at all, but what we can do.
I think I'd like to add to it, though, that if we do water restrictions, while I think we can do it by day, and David, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we can really restrict it to just night because we have so many water pressure issues.
That's right.
That for some people, they just can't get pressure except for during the day. That's when they get the most pressure. And so it may make more sense for them, tell me if I'm wrong, to water during the day just so they can actually get enough water, especially during July and August.
Doesn't a lot evaporate?
We really do try to balance the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, residents complain when our city parks are going on in the day. We're a large water user. And when we try to balance the system, we're trying to put some of the water use in the day and some at night so that the system can maintain pressures for everybody. So it is difficult.
So some people have chosen to water earlier or later, whatever, just so they have enough pressure. But I also know that the last time we did odd even days, we did have staff that spent time going out at night to look for those who weren't following the schedule. I don't think it's fair for us to ask our staff to work a 40-hour work week and then also work overnight. So I agree with Councilmember Augustus, which is I feel strongly if we're going to make a rule, whether it's water restrictions or an ordinance or whatever the case is, then we should enforce the rules. I don't think it's fair to say we're going to have a rule, but we're not going to enforce it. So if we do want to do restrictions, and I don't think it's a bad idea, then I think we need to ask our finance department to look for somewhere in the budget where we can hire a couple of people to do that at night.
Well, maybe because it is summer, we could hire some interns that are looking for jobs that, you know, reduce rates, and their students are often willing to work in those later evenings when
the average person doesn't. One thing that came out of the Water Conservation Committee is that people watering at night or during the day really doesn't turn the needle much in terms of watering your lawn. So I don't think I agree with Mrs. Reese. We shouldn't tell them that they can only water during the night. The really bad thing is if someone is watering when it's really windy, because then there's no benefit to their lawn at all. It's getting blown all over the place. So leave it up to the residents in terms of when they want to do it, but have an odd even strategy so they water, you know, you guys come up whether it's three times a week or twice a week, whatever we decide to do, and then realize we don't really have the ability to enforce, so we're going to have to rely on the residents to do the right thing.
And well, and you don't have to have 100% enforcement either. If the policeman tried to catch everyone speeding, it would take a cop on every corner.
Right.
And but just the fact that I could get pulled over and fined makes it so I don't speed. And I got pulled, you know, I haven't been pulled over for years.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at. Right now, we don't have the ability to do any enforcement. Right. Period.
We got
to
have some. We got to find the ability to do some.
But that's my point. We need to find that before we put restrictions in place. So, and that's what I've been saying the whole
can
time.
Can we instruct David to look for some part-time employees for the seasonal work?
We got to look at the budget and figure out where we're going to come up with the money first.
I noticed that Mr. Mogg was raising his hand. Did you?
Hello, I'm over here.
If you want to come up to the mic.
It's your department. That's great.
Jeff, you drive around the city more than anybody. I know that.
That's all I do. No, a couple of comments that have caught my attention. I know I've been looking at some of the other jurisdictions and what they've been doing, and one of them, Payson, I know, has proposed doing a two-day water week. And then this has been brought up. I'm a little concerned on our system. We're different than most jurisdictions in that they need recovery time in their reservoirs to accumulate water to operate their system. And we have fairly small reservoirs, and so I would have a little bit of concern that if we switched to where everybody watered 4 days out of seven, one group 2 days, another group 2 days, then our capacity, our pressures are going to drop even farther, and we may not have the capacity to meet that. That's just my own opinion. I don't know, David.
But aren't we currently watering 7 days out of seven?
Yes, but it's my opinion that by water, everybody watering the full week, we're dispersing the amount of water we're using over 7 days versus 4 days.
You're diluting
days.
The number of users per day out, where if you take all of those users and push them into 4 days, you're actually putting more of a draw on the system now,
right.
Which I believe last year, and you can tell me if this is right or wrong, pretty much if we ran our tanks down during the night, I mean, it would take a whole day to kind of capture that water, but we were down almost to zero,
and
I don't know that we can take any more demand on our system. Yeah, and if we push everybody to 2 days, there's no way.
So if you look at the report that we got from our water consultants, you remember those graphs that they had where they showed the pressure dipping,
mm-hmm.
and they measured it in different regions in the city. Those dips would get more severe if we squeeze people into watering on just certain days.
So, Mr. Ma, what would you recommend?
So my only suggestion would be if we did 2 day week watering, which was brought up, that we divided the city into zones, so we would still be watering all week and distributing that demand over the full 7 days versus.
So if it was two days a week, it was you would recommend zones. What if they were watering 3 days a week?
Every day but Saturday, same.
Then we're going to end up pretty much half and half.
Same.
So
I think odd even, right? Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. So it's zones if it's 2 days. It's odd even if it's 3 days.
But okay. Then you can't do like Daniel said and meet state
requirements, and then you get people trying to overwater.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just a little thought I had while I was
talking. All right. Well, we've had a good discussion here. We will come back and talk about this more. So I'll take a motion to go into exec session.
Can I ask just a quick question for clarification before we end?
Yep.
Do we want to come up with some type of direction or something that we can be doing from now until our next meeting in May so that we're making progress to that point and not waiting until May and then saying, oh, now let's do that? I mean, is there anything that we can come up with as a body? Like Mike suggested, can we get some part-time help to monitor something? I mean, should we be looking at numbers and seeing what we have available so that when we come back to discuss this again, we have a better idea of at least where we're at?
there's a lot of things we can do. And so we can have online discussions in terms of batting ideas back and forth. And so I would encourage you to participate in those because there's sometimes when council members haven't participated, Mr. Bunker's had to sit on paperwork he needed to submit because you guys didn't participate. So if we start an online discussion, I need everybody to join in the discussion and give their input so that when we come back in the first Tuesday in May, then we're ready to discuss things. Now, if you've got specific ideas that you have, put them in that online discussion and let's see if it's things that we can implement between now and then.
Yeah, that works.
All right.
Okay. All right. So
Can I just add one thing to that? That can we direct staff to look for creative ways in the budget that we might hire some part-time or interns to?
The council certainly can do that. You as an individual cannot, but the council certainly can.
I've got a great idea, I think, for this.
Say that again.
I've got what I think is a good idea as far as where to budget for that, those staffers. I think that I do believe that if we do it right, then it will reduce water usage, which means it will reduce costs of pumping water. And I would suggest that we have it come out of the same funds, same water funds that the pumps are in.
Okay. I would just submit all of your ideas to an online discussion, okay. whatever they may be.
Okay.
Okay. I need a motion to go into exec session to discuss imminent litigation and incompetence, please.
I move that we go into executive session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205 to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much.
Greg, Sam, come get a cupcake.
Mr. Bunker.
I'm reporting.
We're back in
council
meeting.
Mr. Geddes has a question for you, Mr. Bunker.
And maybe I missed it earlier, just... Maybe I missed because I missed your report, but you sent some correspondence this last week about the well and the letter of credit. Are we moving forward on that?
Yes. So Rod Mund, who was the low bidder, Water Well Services, provided that letter of credit.
Okay.
So he will be on site Thursday. He's going to have to cordon off the entire parking lot, take the roof off that well out. And there's a section that he's going to take off and start pulling the pump out.
Good.
He said that he could be done by the end of May.
Man, that's iffy.
Okay.
But we don't have a good alternative.
No, we don't. No, we don't. It's just, this is
a good job on that. Trick I mean, I think we got to do it.
Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
The motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Jenny.